All right, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to the 20th episode of the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy, aka NESRuler22, and welcome to the weekly episode of 22 Shots of Moods and Horror. Hope everybody out there had a safe weekend, and we are back with, you know, a pretty big milestone here on the show. This is our 20th show, so that means we've done 4 months worth of shows, which is pretty fucking awesome that we've already been doing this for 20 episodes. I think that we didn't think that it would actually, you know, turn out this well. And, you know, all you guys listening to it, so we appreciate that. So this week is our viewer's choice week. We'll be talking about three films that you guys recommended to us to watch. We'll be giving you our opinions. I picked David Arquette's The Tripper. Moods picked, what'd you pick, Moods? The Fog?
Well, I originally picked Calvary, yeah. But it turns out that shit is harder than shit to find. What the fuck was that?
We couldn't rent it, guys. We tried to rent it, and we couldn't rent it. So that's why we didn't do that one.
So apologies goes out to, I believe, Martin VP. I think he might have picked that. But yeah, it just wasn't going to work out for all three people. So then I changed it to The Fog.
And then JP picked Pieces, which is an interesting
choice.
Interesting choice. I know it's Adrian's favorite. I think it's his favorite film.
No, his favorite film is Suspiria.
Well, he always fucking talks about Pieces.
I think it's just one of his favorite films.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what we'll be doing on this week's our main reviews, and then we'll be talking about one pick of the week that we watched this week. The Mood Swings, which is this week's question, is the top five post-2000 vampire films. And we'll be talking about the news, of course, with JP, which is a very interesting week in the horror news. If you guys have been following what's been going on recently with one of our favorite franchises, and then you'll probably be knowing what we're talking about, and we'll get into that in a little bit. If you guys want to follow us on Twitter, you could do so at the 22 Shots Podcast. On Twitter, just search 22 Shots Podcast, and we're over there. If you guys want to follow us or do anything on that, we're always up there tweeting it out to you guys. And if you want to email us any questions or anything like that, you could do so at the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror at gmail.com. That's 22 Shots of Moods and Horror at gmail.com. So go ahead, JP, with the news.
Okay, so
The
news this week, I think we should just lead off with the big story, the one that kind of everybody's talking about right now. And it was originally this news is so weird to me because Andrew Ballina posted a video, posted a video on YouTube, and I shared it in the group page. Basically, he somehow found out through, I believe, like Blu-ray forums, like the Blu-ray.com forums or something, that there was links posted on Amazon for the Halloween Deluxe 15-disc edition and the 10-disc edition. So I was instantly, I was like, bullshit. There's no way this is happening. Too many people own the rights. You know, Echo Bridge has the exclusive rights. And then it said the producer's cut, and I was like, even more bullshit. So afterwards, I tried to contact Anchor Bay through phone, but their offices were closed.
You were actually going to fucking call? Look at you.
Yeah, because I needed to know.
You're doing some research here. Yeah, like, so they're going to be like, oh yeah, we're totally going to release information first.
They probably would have been like, who the fuck are you? And I'd be like, oh,
I'm some Mexican who lives in Pennsylvania.
But I actually did find their number. I did find their number. It's not located on their website, actually.
Ooh,
but
look at you, detective.
I called them up and it was like, thank you for calling Anchor Bay, located in Beverly Hills or something. And it was like, our offices are closed on, you know, during the weekend or whatever. It's like, fuck. So,
but dude,
then
seriously,
mad
props for trying to phone them, though.
Yeah, thanks. Be like, we're totally gonna break this news to some some Mexican in Pennsylvania who's on a horror podcast. I'm totally gonna break it to him.
But honestly, how heartbreaking was it to find out that their office was closed? I would have been like, ah, shit.
Honestly, I was relieved though, because I was like, shit, dude, I was kind of nervous calling them. Because I didn't know what I was going to say. I just was like, I'm going to wing it. Anyway, I did some more like looking into it, and I did find out a few different things. First of all, I checked out their Twitter page, Anchor Bay's Twitter page, and it did say we have big news coming this Monday. So that right there, I was kind of like, wait a minute. Like, this is kind of too much to be a coincidence. And then, you know, the Amazon links were legit. I did see them before they were pulled down. Then I found out a little bit more that a couple months ago, I believe 2 months ago, on Echo Bridge's website, they discontinued all of their Halloween and Hellraiser, Dimension, all the stuff that was by Dimension and Miramax Films. It was all discontinued. And then it was, by the time I looked, it was actually all removed. So it was no longer, all that stuff was not available on Echo Bridge's website anymore. Then I looked when the original deal happened.
Man, look at you. The original deal happened
in May of 2011. So 3 years, which would make sense. Like a 3-year deal, it ended. So I was like, this is way too much to be just a coincidence. And sure enough, on Monday, they announced it earlier than they said they was. If you looked on Anchor Bay's thing, they said they was going to announce it at like 12 Pacific Standard Time. And it was announced way before that.
You son of a bitch, you announced it at 12:01. I'm going to sue your ass for fucking lying to me. I'm JP. You have to tell me right on the fucking
No, no, top. It was done before. So it was like they were early.
I'm just busting your
Which
balls.
Was good. So basically, long story short, that I guess I can't do that now since I already told the whole story. But the thing that blew my mind was that Scream Factory was involved, because that came out of nowhere. Nobody was expecting that, right? I mean,
no way.
You just thought it was Anchor Bay. Mm-hmm. So it's official. The entire series in one box set, all 8 original films plus the Rob Zombie films. And it will be available, I believe, September-ish? September 23rd.
23rd, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So there's 2 versions of this. There's the 10-disc edition, which is just all the films, and then there's the 15-disc edition, which is all the Halloween films, and then the TV cut of Halloween 1 and 2, and the mono track for Halloween 1 was reinserted or something. I know some fans were complaining about that in the last release. And then it also has the big thing is the producer's cut of Halloween 6.
So, yeah. So it's basically coming down to spending $120 for the producer's cut.
Mm-hmm. Well, no. I disagree, dude.
If they're new transfers, it'll be worth it. But if they're just using like the Echo Bridge transfers...
They're definitely not going to use the Echo Bridge transfers. There's no way
they're
going to do
that. I think that they're going to be doing some new transfers and stuff. But, I mean, no matter how you look at it, I mean, 90% of us horror fans, we already own all the movies. I mean, I'm not going to deny the fact that having the whole collection in one box set, including the remakes and everything, is so fucking cool. But I already do have multiple copies of like every film.
Same.
You know, see, like I
don't. I always said, you know, it's stupid to do that. It's stupid to buy all these copies when you know there's going to be a better release soon. That's why I didn't buy, you know, that's why I'm not buying certain releases of like of films like Evil Dead. Like, I'm not going to go buy every single release that comes out. Like, I'll wait till the one that I want.
I'm not doing that either, but I'm just saying, like, Anchor Bay, you know, released Halloween 4 in tins. So, you know, of course I have those and stuff. And the Scream Factory with 2 and 3, you know, you got those. And I've got, like, 12 editions of Halloween. Like, how many – like, I'm just saying. But, I mean, I'm really stoked for the box set, just to have the whole collection in one. I think it's a pretty cool idea. But what I find even more intriguing about the whole thing is that, you know, if Scream Factory and Anchor Bay are going to start working together –
Well, we don't know that officially if this is going to be continued.
But this is definitely something that we can look, you know, have our hopes up for, you know, and the question got brought up even by you and me today, you know, with Phantasm, you know, maybe this is the start of something, who knows, but maybe it's not either. But I mean, it does kind of, you know, give us some light, you know, for stuff like that. So
I think I actually don't see anything wrong with this release at all. Like, there is all the Halloween films in one place. That's a hook right there. It's not the hook, but it's a hook.
I didn't mean to come off sounding like a negative Nancy there. I'm truly and honestly stoked as fuck. But I'm not going to lie. I was a little confused today when I read that the pre-orders limited to 500 exclusive to Scream Factory.
I think a lot of people only
going to be shipping to the States, which is a bummer though too.
Why you have me?
Well, I mean, for some people that don't have these connections and stuff, automatically just cannot get that, you know, if they want that limited cover poster.
But once it hits Amazon, though, people can just order from Amazon US.
It already is on Amazon.
Yeah, but it's not going to have, you know, that special poster and, you know, that stuff. I mean, some people are going to miss that.
Special poster is only limited to 500 people anyway, so fans are already missing out.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, for somebody like Andrew that you know is going to buy this set and probably would go after that exclusive set too, because Halloween is not only his favorite film, his favorite franchise. I mean, he was the first person to post this on YouTube. Yeah, like, no, he obviously knows what's going on. So I can't imagine how disappointed he is that if he doesn't have a connection in the U.S., you know, to get it for him and send it to him. That's kind of the shit. So I was really disappointed when I heard that. I mean, there was already people making videos today about, you know, specific Canadians were like, well, I want to pre-order. I want that poster, but we can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, you know, like I said, me and that other person, you know, we have connections and stuff, but fuck it, I'm just going to get it off Amazon, man.
Yeah, I really don't have, like, a huge, like, need for that poster, to be honest. Like, I want this set. That's all I really care about. I like the idea. Like, this is – the reason I'm so pumped for this set is it's everything. It's everything in one place. This will be the most – complete edition out there. You know, you have all the films, you have all the different cuts of the films, you have them all on Blu-ray, not to mention there's a whole disc full of special features. There's a 40 page booklet, each film is in its own separate case, a black Blu-ray case with new artwork on the outside, and then all the theatrical key arts on each case.
Yeah, dude, I almost shit my pants when I heard them say that, or when I read that. I was like, that is the coolest damn thing. And we all got to agree, though, that's one of the downfalls to the Friday the 13th box set.
In my opinion, from the beginning.
You know, it's like, you know, if you're going to double up the discs, it's kind of a letdown. And, you know, even to make things even more worse, I think the Nightmare on Elm Street is probably the weakest box set. You know, just a little slim line with all in there doubled up and stuff. It's pretty disappointing. But this right here is the fucking topper, man. Like, all in separate cases, all on their separate disc. You can't fucking go wrong with this, man.
And not to mention, you know, they're going to hook it up with special features, man. Like, it's exactly. Scream Factory.
It even said it's going to have
new special features.
And which was really exciting, because the first thing I thought of was I just wanted to see a brand new documentary, maybe like on the whole franchise, like a brand new thing and stuff, you know?
Now, I assume that Scream will probably put the discs from their two releases of Halloween. I'm assuming that they're just going to use those, but I could be wrong. Like, they might not, actually, because who knows, like, what kind of deal it is. There's a lot of, you know, unanswered questions right now in terms of, like, how it's all going to work. I think Anchor Bay technically is the one releasing it, but it's put together by Scream Factory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still, like, a little unsure exactly what's going on there. But, I mean, either way, you know, it doesn't really matter to me. This just sounds absolutely amazing.
The whole idea that these two companies can come together and actually strike a deal is just unheard of. Like, that doesn't really happen anymore. You know, that's why we haven't seen so many films and so many releases, is because of rights issues.
Mm-hmm. Man, I'm like, I gotta say, man, I am really, really curious to see what the producer's cut of Halloween 6 is gonna look like.
Yeah, because they're gonna completely, you know, restore it, because it's gonna be a Blu-ray release.
Yeah, like, I mean, I've heard that it's, you know, it's pretty, you know, the bootlegs and stuff are pretty shoddy. So I've actually heard
that there are some really, really good ones out there, though.
Is there? Okay, well, that's good.
They're gonna use the original negative also, which is not what the I think it's like a print that they copied onto the, you know, bootlegs. I think Mustafa Akkad does have, like, the original negatives. I remember him talking about that, I think.
Okay.
Pretty awesome. So, yeah, I mean, this is fantastic for me. $130, honestly, I was expecting way more. Like, what was the Friday the 13th set? It was like 90 or something. Or it was, like, 100 and something at first, right?
I think it was, like, 120 or something like that. I ended up paying like 75 for mine or something. But
that's a really good deal. But okay, 79. So your original price is 120, and there was nothing new. It was just the Blu-ray films. You know, there wasn't no new features. There wasn't no you know, produced. There wasn't no altered cut, you know, different cuts or anything.
I think one of the things that was different that Friday 1, 2, and 3 had been released on Blu-ray before. I think these were new transfers. I think that was, you know, the big thing. So I'm like, oh, okay.
So you know damn well that Halloween 6, 7, and 8 are going to have new transfers. I don't know. They'll probably use one of the transfers from Halloween 1, the second transfer, the 35th anniversary edition or whatever. They'll probably use that one, which is a damn good transfer. And then the Scream Factory ones, of course. Now, Halloween 4 and 5, are they going to just use the Anchor Bay transfers?
They look like ass, man.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're not the worst transfers in the world. But
they're
not
bad, but they look...
Yeah, they're pretty average Blu-ray transfers. I hope that they do better transfers on those ones, too. They're pretty average.
I honestly think by the time this is all said and done, the thing is, we know Scream Factory and we know the type of stuff that they do. So there's no reason that this set shouldn't be completely amazing.
Mm-hmm. In black cases, though, man, damn, it's just so awesome.
I don't know why they wouldn't use orange cases.
The black, you know, yeah, I mean, orange makes sense.
I mean,
too,
okay, so check it out. Black is cool because they're blue, but black is boring on DVD. You know what I mean? Like DVDs, all of them are black, so it's like, ah.
Well, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I just can't actually wait to see what it looks like.
I'm just really excited also for potential future stuff. What about Hellraiser? What about Children of the Corn? Imagine an entire Anchor collection Bay. Of Children of the Corn. That would be terrible.
Anchor Bay doesn't own any of the Hellraisers.
Why don't they?
Besides the first two.
Why don't they?
Echo Bridge owns all the other ones.
Dude, the Echo Bridge deal was with Miramax Dimension. That deal's over.
Oh, it's over?
Yeah.
So who owns the rights? Are they public domain then?
No, they're Miramax. Well, I don't know if they went back to Anchor Bay or if they're still with Dimension, but I'm sure if Anchor Bay could have got the deal with Halloween with the Weinstein Company, then why couldn't they do it with Hellraiser or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Who the hell knows?
But let's face it, though, man. We all want to see that Phantasm Blu-ray box set come out in a brand new sphere.
Yeah, I want a gold sphere.
A gold sphere? Yeah, man. Oh,
so you can, so like, cool. Rub against it, JP, and, you know, stroke it and be like, yeah, I like my gold sphere.
Why not?
Really. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see more partnerships happening. So, yeah, I mean, I think we pretty much said everything that we could say about this one. I think we're all, like, I'm probably actually going to buy this, like, day one. The suggested retail price is $169.99, but you can already get it for $135 on Scream Factory's
website. And $119 on Amazon.
Oh, really? So is that for the 10-disc edition?
Yep. No, 15-disc.
Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, 15 discs, dude, that's... The idea that they're in their own separate case is pretty cool alone.
Yeah, it's under $10 at Blu-ray, man. It's pretty damn good. So.
Yeah.
Dude, 15 freaking Blu-rays stacked on top of each other is pretty big. That's going to be a big set.
Hell yeah.
It's the way it should be.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why more box sets aren't like that. I understand that it's more, you know, it's cost efficient and stuff, but you know, or it costs more to do it, but I mean, seriously, it just looks so much damn cooler.
This
really
is a huge release for them, though, because the success of this will also just benefit their willingness to pick up, you know, spend more money on things. Because if this makes a lot of money, then they'll have more money to spend.
You know, I honestly can't see this not doing well, but at the same time, I can see it, you know, kind of doing average too, because. I mean,
I was kind of surprised, man. I was kind of surprised that more people wasn't like super pumped for it. I love this announcement.
I know David Kaye wasn't very pumped about it.
I think it's the price, man. I think even at 120 or 130, like, I don't find it too bad for what you're getting.
I don't find it bad at all. Like, I think it's a fantastic price. I was expecting way more. I was expecting like $170, to be honest.
Well, I mean, that's the actual retail price.
Yeah, so. But that's not the price you're going to pay. Who pays retail?
No. Not me.
I could think of one person who would pay $20 for Grown Ups 2.
But really, like, I do think that it's a fantastic price. Like, I have no beef with the price at all. It's worth it. I mean, you have 15 discs there. You have 10 films. That's, you know, a little over $10 per film. And then you, if you factor in the producer's cut, that's a $20 purchase right there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be awesome, man. Can't wait.
Isn't that kind of sad? People would pay $20 for a producer's cut of a, like, semi-shitty movie.
No, not really. I actually like
it. I like it. It's like, it's like my favorite after two.
Yeah, I think it's up there.
I mean, Halloween after 6 three, is
really, like, grown on me.
Yeah, I don't really like Halloween 4 and 5, but Halloween 6 is kind of grown on me. I like the head explosion scene.
Yeah, okay, so I guess we can move on, correct?
Yep.
All right. The Omen is now becoming a made
for TV. Let me guess, TV series.
No, it's going to be a movie, but it's a made for TV the Lifetime channel. This is going to be a Lifetime channel film. It's pretty funny.
How is this a Lifetime? Is it like in a world where four women try to help a boy who's possessed by the devil, The Omen?
That was very, very poor interpretation of the Lifetime channel.
You know, it's all fucking like the Golden Girls and shit like that.
Golden Girls kick ass, first of all. Second of all, I used to watch the Lifetime channel a lot as a kid because I had a mom who watched the Lifetime channel a lot. And I didn't hate everything that was on there. I mean,
does it get a bad rap, JP?
I mean, there was some all right movies on there. You know, some dramatic shit like 15 and Pregnant. I remember watching that as a kid.
So is it like a small mini series?
I think it's just it's a movie. It's like a spinoff following a young boy named Damien, now an adult, haunted by his past. Damien is faced with a series of macabre events and must finally face his true destiny. He is the Antichrist.
His true inner demons.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, honestly, I don't know. To be honest, I wasn't a fan of, you know, the remake. I don't know how you guys thought of the remake.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen a single Omen film.
On 6/6 of 2006?
I do remember when it came out.
Yep. Everyone will remember when it came out.
Jesus Christ, JP, you've never seen any Omen films?
Not one.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, I suggest that you don't start with the remake. I thought the remake was pretty bad, actually.
Oh, so would you suggest I start with, like, part 3 or something?
Yeah, totally, man. You start with part 3. Go to part 4, which is...
Obviously, I'm going to start with part 1.
Yeah, part 4 was actually a made-for-TV film, I believe.
Well, now there's another one.
And it's Jeremy, fucking...
effing with your mic.
I'm sorry. It's not typing this week. Now it's fucking mice and my fucking mic. So it was my fucking fault.
Seriously, dude, The Omen's such a great movie, man. You should really check that out sometime. It's great. Even the sequel's good. Like, part 2's good. Yeah. Check them out.
Yep. So, the thing with this is, it's not us. We are not the target audience for this. We are the, like, 40 to 55-year-old females are the target audience. Or, you know, 20-plus females. Because I know they watch it a lot, too. Yeah. So, I mean, we're not the target audience, but it's happening.
I feel so bad now. Like, I'm not the target. They just don't care.
No.
You know, it's like, okay. Fine, whatever.
Yeah. After that, the film Wolf Cop, which is screened at the Cannes Film Festival,
Wolf success. Cop. That's awesome. I've been raving about this film for like a year and a half now. When I first saw the old Wolf Cop?
You've seen it?
Dude, no. I've been posting the fucking trailers, the teaser trailers and the trailers like 100 times. This movie's been in production for like 2 fucking years, man. It's a Canadian production. That's why I know about it.
Can I get to the news?
No, you can't. I'm just saying. I'm so excited that it's actually
so excited there. That you don't even know the news yet. So the news, the actual news is that's not the news though. The news is that a sequel to Wolf Cop has been announced. Production starts this fall, simply based on the success of the screenings at Cannes.
That's fucking awesome. Yeah. I can't wait to see it, man. It just looks so good.
Well, Wolf Cop opens in theaters across the country, if you want to call it that, of Canada, June 6, 2014.
I know. I have it written down.
You're really hyped about this, huh?
Yeah, dude. I remember the very first teaser trailer that came out like a year and a half ago. I almost shit myself, man. I was like, that thing looks so awesome. So I've been stoked on it. And then I found out it was Canadian. And I was like, ah, oh, even better. So cool. Something to be proud of.
All right.
Come on, man. I've been stoked on it. I can't believe you have Wolf Cop news. I'm amazed. So damn cool.
Okay.
But a sequel? That's like twice as better. It's
not
literally
the only one either.
Twice as better.
There's another sequel news that comes from Godzilla 2. Godzilla 2 already. After opening with 103 million internationally. The biggest
it made like,
opening of
it made
2014
like,
so
made,
far.
Made like 95 million in the States. I think like 93 to 95.
I think it made 9 million on the Thursday pre-screening.
Yeah.
So basically, if it wasn't being shown in 3D, it would have made about 9 million.
Is this a 3D movie?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, most of the showings are... Fuck, dude. I was thinking about going to see it, you know, on the weekend, but all the nighttime showings were in 3D, and they only had the 2D showings during the day. I was like, what the fuck,
man? Why would we see Godzilla in 3D?
I would only see it on IMAX, man.
First of all, everyone that I've talked to that's seen it in 3D said that the 3D was terrible, but the movie was good, though.
I made 93.2 million.
Yeah, they said the 3D was pretty poor.
See, my issue with when people talk about 3D is every time I hear somebody say that like the 3D sucked, they always say like, yeah, only a couple scenes were in 3D. I don't think they get that the like stuff popping out at you isn't the like full 3D. Like the 3D is just the depth where it looks like
you
can walk
Hugo.
Into the scene. Like
Hugo.
That's what I enjoy about 3D. It's none of the shit flying at me I even care about. I mean, yeah, it's cool here and there. I just like being able to look like I can walk into that world.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? 3D might have sucked.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing. So, but I mean, it doesn't really matter to me. I mean, I'll eventually see it, most likely in 2D. I'll probably go to some matinee by myself.
I was going to go, but I don't know. I mean, it's doing pretty damn well. And I'm sure that. I'm sure. Why would they not do a Godzilla sequel?
I love it, though, man. You know, Godzilla is totally that film that you knew that was going to get the most mixed reactions. Like, I've literally heard people say it's, you know, the best movie of the year, and I've heard other people say it sucks so bad.
Dustin Mills didn't like it.
Dustin did say he didn't like it. And, you know, it's funny, and I've heard other people say that they really enjoyed it that I didn't think that would actually like it that much. So I'm curious. I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't really care, but... I'm going to go see it for myself, but
you can just tell that this is going to be a big one though. Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
It's good that Godzilla is getting like more respect though. Like people are probably going to see Godzilla and now like all the Toho movies are going to get popular and Godzilla is going to become like Godzilla again.
Yeah. You know, there's some 7-year-old kid who's watching Godzilla and he's going to love it and he's going to go and rediscover all the 30,000 other Godzilla movies.
Yeah.
Hopefully, man. That's awesome.
That's what always happens. That's why I don't have, you know, a huge problem with a lot of redos.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, after that, we have the Wolf Creek director, the guy who directed Wolf Creek 2, is making a new film called, I think it's called Jungle, The Jungle, or... And it's about two guys who go into the jungle of Bolivia and two friends something. It doesn't look that interesting.
Doesn't sound very interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't sound very interesting either. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what it is it's like a survival horror type thing. You know, it's people trapped in a jungle, which does actually appeal to me. Like, those are the type of movies that I like a lot.
Mm.
So, yeah, just figured I would let you guys know about that one.
As long as they have to resort to cannibalism at some point.
Well, if there's only two of them, I think it would be at some late point.
Just, yeah.
Who knows? Yeah, I mean, you gotta have cannibalism if you're.
I mean, they could always come across some, you know, random tribe in the bush and then feast.
Yeah, true that. So after that, we have Amityville has wrapped up shooting the Weinstein Company / Dimension, their Amityville film.
Are they still using Dimension like as a label?
Yeah.
Dimension's I haven't seen Dimension since
big production was Scream 4. Scary Movie 5.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say Scream 4.
Yeah, Dimension's still going. They have a sequel to the 1979 Amityville Horror, which is being directed by Frank something. He did, I think he was like a writer on Maniac, the remake, and P2, possibly.
Okay, this is a sequel to the original Amityville film?
Yes.
Whoa.
So what happened to
so
Amityville
weird.
2, Amityville 3, Amityville 4, Amityville Dolls, New Generation? And are they just like saying, oh, those never existed?
Yeah, but you know, the thing is with those later Amityville films, they have...
They weren't really sequels anyway.
Yeah, well, I know Moods watched the New Generation when he was in my house, and he said it was like fucking horrendous.
Oh, it was awful. But yeah, I can see a sequel because, I mean, technically Amityville Part 2 is a prequel. So there technically is no actual sequel because Part 3 isn't related.
Mm-hmm.
So it does make sense, actually, come to think of it. But very cool.
I honestly would rather see Amityville 2 like kind of redone.
So it's getting like a theatrical release? Or?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, theaters January 2nd, 2015.
Hmm. Interesting.
I really love the original Amityville story, as in like the first story, the DeFeo story, not the Lutz story, the family that's set in part two. That story way, way, way better than like all the other stories.
I'm not sure if we ever talked about this before, but I'm really curious on why they never made a sequel to the Amityville remake. If they're going to go back and make a sequel to the 79 version,
it's going
to
confuse people.
Yeah, I think I mean,
that's so far removed. 2005, dude. It's almost 10 years ago.
Okay, but like,
that's like, people are going to remember though.
But like, doesn't it make sense to make a sequel to that? Or just, I mean, or does it make more sense to make the sequel to the 79?
Honestly, from the sounds of this thing, I don't even think it's going to be like a direct like sequel. I think it's going to be just like a story of people going back to the Amityville house. I don't think it's – because I don't know, man. It just sounds like another Amityville movie.
Okay,
like, it doesn't sound like a full-blown like follow-up.
Okay, my other question was, does – it just feels that, you know, the Amityville remake – did it do really poorly or something?
And no, I think it did good. So
why was there never a sequel to it? I don't
understand. There was something to do. I remembered hearing about this years ago. I think it was just something to do with...
Because I know some of the later sequels, the Amityville sequels that came out after, were supposed to be related to, you know, the original Amityville series. You know, like Amityville Haunting or whatever, you know, like the found footage or whatever. Like, it's actually supposed to be related to the original one. And I know it was confusing the shit out of people. But, like, it's fucking bizarre, man. It's weird. They just, like, remake this movie and then just kind of leave it alone.
But they've been doing that, ain't it? I mean, like, Texas Chainsaw 3D.
Oh, no, totally. But, I mean, you know, at least when they true that. I mean, I guess they did kind of a sequel to the remake.
I don't really get remakes anymore, is because they never, the idea behind a remake, they're like, well, it's not a remake, it's a reboot, we want to reboot the franchise, but they never do anything after. They always just reboot it and then let it go until they, you know, 10, like, look at Friday the 13th. They reboot Friday the 13th to restart the franchise. They have a successful film come out. It makes money. Then they go and announce a sequel right after. Then they don't do anything for years. And why? Mm-hmm. Why? Now we're talking like, what do we do next with it? Well, we're going to have to reboot it again. Let's make it found footage. What? What are you talking about? That was your idea to begin with, was to reboot it. So why reboot it again? Stop rebooting things.
Yeah, it makes no sense. I totally agree. I don't even know what to think about that. I mean, I don't know. It just seemed like, you know, if Amityville Horror, the remake, did so well, why wouldn't they just jump on a sequel right away? I mean,
maybe
for fuck's sakes.
It didn't do well critically.
Okay, fuck the critics, man. Like, that doesn't even matter. I mean, if something's going to make money, money's really where it's at. I mean, for, you know, these studios and stuff. I mean, Sharknado 2 hasn't even been made, and they're already announced part 3.
I think Sharknado 2 has been made.
Well, whatever, but there's already, it's not out. Okay,
coming,
let's put it that way.
Coming soon, Sharknado 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and Sharknado X.
But that's the thing, that, you know, they can manage to do those sequels so damn quick. Look at Godzilla. It's already been announced, and it probably will come out, like, next year.
Yeah.
You know, they're probably going to jump on it right away.
I'm thinking, like, 2017.
No, not that long. I think 16.
Because I think of it as one of those big movies like Planet of the Apes. Like, they announced a Planet of the Apes sequel right after it came out. And, you know, we're still waiting. You know, it's like finally getting here. But it's been years.
Yeah.
I was pretty good at that last one.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't really think... I don't know what... See, the Amityville original remake... Jesus Christ, this game confusing. The remake of Amityville, was there a story to tell? Maybe they did try to do a sequel, but they just couldn't find an angle. So it's kind of like they never did one, I guess. I don't know.
But seriously, with all the damn writers in the world, they could have come up with something.
I did know this, though. I heard an interview with a guy who was actually writing a Amityville sequel to the original film, and then... I think the company sold it to Dimension, and then it became the Amityville remake. So originally it was gonna be the Amityville remake was originally slated as a sequel and got turned into a remake.
Really?
Yeah.
That's actually quite interesting.
Yeah. Okay, listen.
I wonder when the guy was writing the movie if he had Ryan Reynolds in mind.
I don't think so. Because it was a sequel, not a
No, I meant even for the part, you know, like the part of anything, you know.
Yeah. I actually don't mind the Amityville remake too much.
I know, we've had lots of conversations about this.
I haven't watched in a while.
Yeah, okay, let's move on. Krampus, the Christmas Devil. Geez, you know, there's Kevin Smith got his Krampus movie. Trick or Treat director Michael Dougherty has his Krampus movie. And now there is a third Krampus movie that I guess... they took to Cannes and kind of, you know, showed it, you know, some posters and stuff. Basically, this is an indie. It's already in post-production. Jeremy, a local police officer, pieces together the truth and realizes that his childhood kidnapper could be a creature of ancient Yuletide lore. Krampus, who is the brother of Saint Nick and the punisher of children who perform acts of unspeakable evil without... repercussion. Can Jeremy kill Krampus and prevent more missing children? So another Christmas horror film, another Christmas Krampus movie. I'm down, I guess. I like Christmas horror.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so what the name of that film is actually just Krampus?
Krampus the Christmas Devil.
Okay. So there was one that came out last year called Night of the Krampus.
Was there?
Yeah, I shit you not, man. It came out obviously in December last year. I believe it was a short film, but it is called Night of the Krampus, though. So that
Kevin
could be...
Smith has his Krampus movie, and
so there's actually four of them within like 2 year span. This one is short, but I've been wanting to check this one out. I've heard actually lots of good things about it. So yeah. Anyways, I just thought I'd throw that in there that there was another Krampus film.
All right, the VHS trailer came out, VHS Viral.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, actually, for fuck's sakes, just call it VHS 3.
Yeah, I'm probably going to start doing that. I actually really think that these stories sound kind of cool. We
I like the ending.
A deranged illusionist who obtains a magical object of great power, a homemade machine that opens a door to a parallel world. This one is probably going to, like, sounds like my favorite. Teenage skaters that unwillingly become targets of a Mexican death cult ritual.
Ooh.
Come on, man. That sounds so awesome.
That sounds like my favorite.
JP, are you going to be in, like, the background, like, with, like, your copies of, like, Texas Chainsaw 3D, like, flicking off everybody that's, like, watching and be like, this movie doesn't suck.
Probably. So the teenage skaters, you know, like, I was a skateboarder. I skated for years, loved skateboarding.
Me too.
I love where they're filming it. It's in those, I think they're filming, like, in the, like, the thing that Terminator 2 with the bike chase, like, one of those things in, like, L.A. or wherever the hell it is.
Nice.
And then another story is,
about
a serial killer. Yeah. The segments are tied together with the goop fame obsessed teens who, are in a car chase in LA and unwittingly become the stars of the next internet sensation. So it sounds like they're kind of going away from the, like, wraparound story of the original VHS, the original two VHSs, and kind of doing their own thing. This, you know, I'm of course excited for.
I think they're shitting these out a little bit too fast.
Nah, dude, I love it.
You don't think you're gonna get quality over quantity?
No, because I just get anytime somebody says that, I just say seek page 332, Friday the 13th, the franchise.
I think that them getting away from that original wraparound story is actually a good idea because
that was in my opinion, complaints.
But honestly, it was the weakest part, really.
Yeah.
You know, of the two.
I thought they always started off strong. Like, they good concept, bad ending.
Yeah.
The ending doesn't, like, make any sense. Especially in VHS 2, it's just like, well, that was not worth it.
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't, you know, with those really two strong, you know, shorts at the ends. Those, oh, man. I mean, you know, it's so frustrating, man. You know, with all these great anthologies, I mean, just imagine how much better VHS 1 and 2 could be with a really kick-ass wraparound story.
Yeah.
But that takes time and effort.
I know, but, like, some new anthologies, man, just kind of fucking drive me fucking nuts, man. Like, you know, especially the anthology films that don't even have a wraparound story. It's just like, hey, we got these shorts. We're just going to put them together. We're going to call them an anthology. And then put it out.
Does Chilling Visions have a wraparound story?
You mean, like, Creepshow?
Well, Chilling Visions, I believe, but at least what they did with Chilling
Visions, it's a wraparound concept.
Yeah, everything kind of starts to kind of come together in itself, which I think is a cool concept in itself.
Yeah, because, like, you see, like, recurring themes that you saw in the second short and the fish short.
See, I think that's kind of the new, like, almost like a new wave of doing an anthology film, really. You know, just kind of intertwining everything. And I think that's really kind of cool. But there is nothing cooler than having, like, a really awesome wraparound story for an anthology film.
Mm-hmm. See, you know, I don't think they're pumping out these VHS films too fast because I haven't seen a bad one yet. If I see a bad one, then maybe
it's only two.
Exactly. So right now I'm cool. Let's bring it on. Let's do another VHS. Let's do another one right after it. I like these. They're fun.
I mean, I think we all get a little skeptical sometimes when things start coming out so fast. But I mean, when VHS 2 got announced, I was like, you know,
it came out so fast. 1 year later. It
did. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? Okay. But then it turned out that I actually enjoyed VHS 2 more. You know, take away for the first one. I really liked the first one, but I really, really, really fucking enjoyed the second one. And I was like, wow, you know, they put it out in a year and they did a really damn good job with it.
Also, I will also say that this is a bit different, Jeremy, because when you have a regular sequel, you're dealing with the same concept, same characters, things transitioning. You need to flesh out a more complete story, but you're just doing short films. You know, there's plenty of short scripts out there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put them in VHS 2 or VHS 3. Let's give new directors a chance to direct them, and then let's create a wraparound story. Pump these out. Like, yeah, they have announced the directors. I believe we talked about them on the last show. I don't have them written down this show.
All right.
Yeah.
So yeah, VHS 3, pretty damn cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nice.
After that, we have Firestarter. So TNT, the cable channel TNT, which actually used to be one of my all-time favorite channels back in the day when they had Monster Vision. There was so much good content on TNT. There was, like, I believe, like, WCW was on TNT.
Yep, WCW was on.
They had awesome, you know, nights of the Road Warrior and Mad Max and Monster Vision. It was a great channel. And then they changed their logo to, like, We Know Drama or something. So, like, they started going – they was trying to reach a different demographic.
From like all the weird wrestling and horror fans to like 50-year-old women.
Yeah, it was like Law and Order was like their shit.
Is such a bad fucking. It's so bad.
Yeah, what was it again? We Know Drama.
We Know Drama. Yeah. It just sounds terrible.
Well, okay. The new tagline is TNT. Wait. The new tagline is. TNT drama boom. That's legit, dude.
It's so fucking bad. Yeah. It's so bad.
But it seems like they.
I'm actually crying. It's so bad.
It seems like what they did was they're trying to, like, kind of reinvent the channel a bit more. I have no faith in this channel. I mean, I literally have not watched TNT besides, like, maybe some basketball or something in
the playoffs
in, like, years, because I stopped watching when Monster Vision went away. Actually, I lied. I actually showed up for Monster Vision, like, 8 weeks in a row, like, waiting for it, because they never really officially they never was like, hey, we're not doing Monster Vision anymore. It just ended. So every week I turned it back on, I was like, where the fuck's Monster Vision?
Why you have to look at the TV guide?
It's so disappointing, man. You know, when, like, your favorite show goes off a network or something like that, you're like, ah.
Could you not afford the TV guide, JP?
I remember back in, you know, I think it was like 2001 or something when Monster Vision ended. I think the last episode ever was, like, Children of the Corn 2.
What a great way to go out.
Totally.
I bet Joe Bob fucking ripped that movie.
I forget. Joe Bob would never really, like, rip stuff.
Well, he would, like, rip TNT much. For centuries.
Yeah, which was awesome. It was, like, kind of like...
No boobs, was, like, a look shame on you, TNT. The curtain. No boobs, shame on you, TNT.
I loved Monster Vision. It was like
I love Joe Bob Briggs, man. Bob Briggs is the best.
I've been saying they need to get Joe Bob another show on fucking the L Ray network. Just give him a show, like a Monster Vision type thing.
I would actually watch that.
That's such a good idea, man. Yeah, I think that would really work, man.
Like, where has he been? Is, like, anybody know?
He still,
like,
goes to conventions and stuff, I believe.
He must be a fucking old man.
Yeah, I hear he's, like, pretty crazy now.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they don't want to give him a show.
Yeah. Basically, the news for this TNT thing was there. I don't even know if this is horror, but they're doing a follow-up to the Firestarter novel, and it's going to follow some people and a young girl with the ability to do whatever. I never
saw Barrymore grown up.
So they're making, like, a TV movie?
Yeah, I think so.
So there actually is a sequel to, it might be to Firestarter. So this is technically,
it's
like
called
a third
Firestarter
one?
Rekindled.
Rekindled? What the fuck? Can we get any cheesier tonight? This is so bad.
You get a Kindle Fire.
Wasn't
Kindle,
it made, like, for the, like, Sci-Fi Channel, I believe? Firestarter 2?
What the fuck? Rekindled? How perfect is... Oh, that's so,
like,
bad.
It's like, are they going to get sued by Amazon because they used, like, Kindle and Fire?
I think this was before the Kindle, so they probably would sue Amazon.
So bad.
This is going to be called The Shop.
It just sounds... It's not interesting.
Yeah, who remembers Firestarter, and who gives a fuck about Firestarter?
I thought Firestarter was pretty good. Like, isn't it?
Yeah, but who remembers it besides, like, people in our group?
I don't know.
To be honest, I don't remember the sequel, like, at all. But I remember the first one, though.
Okay, so after that, we have Rob Zombie's 31. Now, oh, I did
read. Why'd you save this for last?
This isn't last.
Oh, so why aren't you saving this for last?
Because, so I guess Bloody Disgusting did confirm that it refers to October 31.
How do they confirm that?
Their sources, I don't know.
Did they call Rob Zombie and be like, yo, Rob?
Probably.
Or did they call Anchor Bay like you did and be like, yo?
No, because there's like the number one, you know, highest, I guess, like trafficked horror website out there. So, I mean, they have connects.
Yeah.
But
I'm just fucking with you.
Well, that's good to know.
So is it going to be Halloween 3?
No. I believe they also said that it has I'm not sure if they confirmed that it has nothing to do with the Halloween film series, but I want to say that I did read that. So it's not Halloween, but it is on Halloween.
I have to say though, how fucking funny is that though? If it is Halloween 3 and that movie comes out right after the box set, the fucking box set's obsolete.
Yeah.
It's not the complete fucking thing anymore. Come on. Bullshit. Well,
that's the problem. Nothing will ever be complete with a franchise because there will always be another sequel.
I mean, I guess, yeah, true. True that.
But I mean, anyway.
I hope I really hope there is some part of me that kind of wishes that it is Halloween 3, but at the same time.
It's not going to be.
At the same time, I'm leaning towards that it's totally not. Like, I know that it's not going to be.
I hope it's a cool clown story. So that would be fucking awesome.
I hope it's something original. Like, we had this conversation on the group chat and stuff, and you know, is it a prequel to fucking, you know, House of the Thousand Corpses? A, you know, sequel to Devil's Reach, whatever. But I got really thinking about it after, and I was like, fuck it, I just want to see something totally original again.
Yeah, like Devil's, like the Lords of Salem, that was pretty original. It's like, let's see something like that.
Well, see, it was, yeah, exactly. And I think if Rob Zombie would do maybe a clown horror film, an original concept, I mean, yes, Lords of Salem was an original idea, but it's not at the same time because it's all things we've seen before, but I like those things. So it's cool. I'm cool with him doing a clown film or something because we just assume that it's a clown film from the image that we got shown. But yeah, an original film with probably inspired by the shit that he likes. He did email his fans who were part of like the newsletter or something and say, for the hardcore fans who want it nasty and brutal.
You know what? I would have responded.
Fuck yes.
One word. Carnival.
Yes.
Yeah.
Make a fucking carnival horror film, man. I think Rob Zombie could make something pretty damn cool just based in a carnival.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we see glimpses of it in House of a Thousand.
Yep.
Exactly. But just totally just do it to the fucking nines, man. You know, I think it'd be
fucking amazing.
Yeah, oh, it'd be so cool, I'm just man. So glad that he's not wasting his time with a hockey movie because I don't want to see it.
Yeah, same with Kevin Smith. I think that whole idea of a hockey movie died.
See, I would want to see a hockey movie done by Kevin Smith, though.
Yeah, because he's a hockey fan.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm sure Rob is, too, if he wants to do a hockey movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, he probably is. But, yeah, I mean, unless, of course, what did I say? Like, you know, zombie clowns versus Nazi, I don't know. you can make a hockey movie with zombies. I don't know. Sounds
see,
ridiculous.
I like Rob's films. Because I know it's gonna be like a legit horror film that's like lacking comedy. Like there's funny moments, but I know it's not gonna be like a comedy horror, which I'm like happy about because I think that there's a lack of like of big horror films with like no comedy in them.
Mm.
And you know, it's guaranteed to be like brutal and like nasty, like you just said, like, you know,
Devil's Reject was pretty brutal. I don't know how he's gonna top that, man.
Yeah, dude, Devil's Rejects was like the first like extreme movie that I ever seen, like where I was just like, holy
yeah, me and my grandma were like sitting in the movie theater going, this is like one of the most fucked up movies we saw like in the theaters, like,
yeah, because it was mainstream too, you know, which is just like, wow, like they, like lots, you look at it now, like, and it's still surprising like what is shown in that it made it R.
Yeah, like me and my grandma were like, damn, this movie has a lot of boobs and fucked up shit in it.
Yeah, I love Devil's Rejects. And, you know, I pretty much, that one miss is Halloween 2, but, you know, that, like, Rob Zombie with his original stuff is, you know, yeah. 3 for 3.
Man, I love House of a Thousand Corpses so much. I think it's such a modern-day masterpiece. I've said that many times before, and I'll stand by it. Mm. I love that film, man.
I have my issues with it, man. I think that whole end is just... You know how that end... You know how you know that ending is bad? Is because in Devil's Rejects, it completely strays away from that whole idea of there being all these goddamn people underground. Like, they never mention it. They never... The cops never find... Like, it's just... You can tell that it was a bad idea and probably has something to do with studio intervention, because I heard that film was like plagued with that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of issues.
I hate that ending, dude. It really bugs me. It makes no sense at all.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, to be honest, I don't really. It doesn't bug me.
I know.
It's such a huge scene, though. It's a really big scene.
It is. And it for some weird reason, I totally understand where you're coming from. But at the same time, I'm like, it doesn't bug me.
Yeah, I know. I know Moods has the same passion of that film like I do, but
yeah, man. And to be honest, it's seriously to this day
best Blu-ray.
I would totally agree with that. But yeah, I mean, I have my issues with the film. I still really, really like the film, and it would probably make, you know, my top something. Mm-hmm. But I just have certain issues. So yeah. Now, the trailer that came out for that, you know, goes through the history of his films, you know, like House of a Thousand, Devil's Rejects, Halloween 2, El Super Bista, you know, it goes through all this, his films he did. And then it's like, what do you, like, if you, do you, so you're pretty sold on it being something original. I am too. I think that's what it's going to be.
Yeah,
me and you said that right off the bat. Remember on, like, the poll? Like, I said that was going to be something original.
Yeah, I honestly would, like, I know people are like, I want a, you know, House of a Thousand prequel. I actually don't.
If it was Halloween 3, I thought it would get leaked already and we would know it was Halloween 3. Somebody would leak it somehow.
Yeah, the only thing that I was thinking is, you know, Halloween 3 did just get announced. Mm-hmm. So it would make sense if he was going to do a Halloween 3 that it would be at this time. But I just think that he's so, like, done with that, man. It's just not something he wants to return to, unless it was like for a shitload of money, which I'm not even sure that the Dimension would want to go in another Rob Zombie direction anyway, because from what I understand, H2 didn't do like that well, right?
Oh, no shit, because it sucked.
To put it blunt.
Fuck, it made no sense, that fucking movie.
I won't go to say that it absolutely sucked, but it's
yeah, the opening sequence. Lesser. The opening sequence was the only cool fucking part. So.
No, I disagree, man. There was a lot of like good stuff there. Like we talked about it before.
Like what, seeing Michael talk?
No, yeah, that's really fucking. I love the angle of like, let's follow the final girl and see what happens to her after the night. You know, after, because we always see the final girl on the night of the craziness, and then if there is a sequel, like, you know, Kristen in Elm Street, it just follows her as she's like now in a school with a bunch of new people. Like, it never
Halloween
really
too?
Shows. Well, that's the same night.
Yeah, because she turns into this crazy fucking angry bitch because she's all fucked up from the events of the first film.
Yeah, like, and that's the thing I like because it's more realistic look at what mental toll that takes on somebody. Mm-hmm. And I really, really like that in
H2. Oh, even Malcolm McDowell's character, you know.
Yeah, and it kind of takes everybody. It shows what, even Sheriff Brackett, any Brackett, all of them. It kind of, what happens to these people, the different people, when the, you know, after a long period of time. Even Michael, to a certain extent. Like, it makes sense. Like, honestly, he probably would be out in the field walking around with a hoodie on. Like, that's kind of what I would think. I think people just don't want to see it. They don't want to know. But I actually kind of did want to know. I don't mind a lot of that stuff.
Like,
it's just
before,
the movie has many, many problems.
Michael,
like,
without a mask kind of bothers me. Like, seeing his face, like,
yeah,
even though you see it a little bit in Halloween 1, but it's not like a light like right on his face and you got like see him like I don't picture Michael looking like that.
Well, that's the thing, is you can never picture what Michael looks like. So anything that you see is instantly going to be less of what you – it's going to be lesser than what you thought.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just going to be like a disappointment, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because – yeah. I think one of the main issues that people have with the film is obviously like the whole white horse angle and that whole thing and stuff. And a lot of people were tripping balls. Yeah, a lot of people trip balls. You know, it was just, you know, it was just another way for Rob Zombie to put his wife into the film. I mean, I think that, like, I actually did a lot of research, like, on the White Horse and, like, the meaning of it and stuff, and kind of watched the film over and over again. I was really, really looking into this because I really wanted to, you know, kind of try to figure out his vision is for real. And I don't think that he wrote the film, you know, okay, yeah, I'm going to fucking create this White Horse issue just to throw my wife into the film. I don't think that's how it went down
at all. But, it is the, I think it's the prime example of where the case came from. It's why these people have a case for it. You know, the people that say, oh, he just puts his stupid wife in everything because this and that. Like that, because she's in Halloween 2 when she was dead, is the reason they say that. It's, but I am with you where I don't think that it was written that way specifically for his wife.
Yeah.
Like when I first saw Halloween 2 in theaters, I almost walked out. I was on the brink of it. Like
really? Like I never would like think that.
But
it,
wait,
like,
let
even
me,
watching
let me,
it now.
Let me finish. Okay. I've watched it three or four times since then on Blu-ray. My opinion definitely changed on the film. I don't think it was as bad as what I saw it the first time I saw it in theaters. But that White Horse thing, I just can't look past it for some reason.
The thing is, it's
that's like
not
that's like,
what
that's my
anybody
main
wanted,
with the film.
And that's the issue. Nobody wanted any of that. So it's like they go in and they just don't care. Even if it is like, say it wasn't Halloween and it was a completely different movie, some of that shit might have worked. But because it's Halloween, you don't want it. It's like, I don't even want to think about white horses and shit. Nobody wants it. And, yeah. You know, I can see traces of Lords of Salem in Halloween 2. I think Lords of Salem is the movie that Rob wanted to make when he was making Halloween 2.
That's so interesting. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that actually a little bit too.
It feels like he doesn't even want to make Halloween 2. Like he wants to do some, he's like reaching to do something different and it's affecting.
So why did he make Halloween 2 then?
He might have been contractually obligated, or he just got a shit ton of money.
I don't know if he would do it for the money. I don't think he's that kind of person, but I don't know that. Like, I think he's like Kevin Smith. Like, I don't think Kevin Smith would do something for the money.
I don't really get the mentality behind that. Like, maybe if it's something you didn't want to do altogether, but I mean, it's not like it's the worst thing in the world. It's like, all right, I really don't want to do Halloween 2, but if you give me a bunch of money, I'll do it. Like, I kind of don't really want to.
Well,
but
I remember Rob Zombie originally turning down Halloween 2, and because I don't think they wanted him to, like, have his own vision on the fucking film. And then they actually came to agreement where, okay, they're going to let him do his own thing, and then that's why he actually agreed to do it. So, and this is what he came up with. So the product of the film is actually his own vision. I don't think it has anything to do with anybody else. And like I said before, I'm not going to get into the whole White Horse thing because we'll sit here for fucking 3 hours talking about this. But I really like kind of studied it and stuff. And I picked out things every time I watched the film. And I understand what he was doing with it. But like you said before, it's probably something you don't want to see visually. That whole angle doesn't seem. I mean, for somebody that
just doesn't belong.
Like for like the mainstream.
But it's really deep. It's actually quite deep what he was getting into,
and I think it's almost.
I think it's too much for the film, and this is where it comes back to, you know, him making Lords of Salem because he's trying to do something kind of
different,
you know, kind of different, and he went really almost too deep, and I think it almost confused people. I think a lot of people completely don't understand what they're seeing on.
Well, yeah, it did
in that
because
film.
It doesn't belong in that film. It's going to confuse people because they're immediately when they're seeing it, they're resistant to it. They don't want to see it, so they don't even want to try to figure out what's going on because they don't want it.
I mean, that sucks because maybe I'm like in the small minority that, you know, when I first watched the movie in the theater, I was, you know, I was a little confused too. So that's why I really wanted to look into it and kind of figure out what the hell exactly what I just watched and stuff. And then when it came out, I watched it a bunch more times and, you know, it makes a lot more sense, but I don't think there's a lot of people out there willing to do that and kind of figure it out and stuff. And I think, you know, with a film like Halloween, I don't think you should have to either. you know, to really take the time to research a film and figure out what the fuck what just happened. I mean, Halloween is a slasher film. I mean, it almost plays out like it's so psychological in the film, and you're just like, what?
Well,
like,
here's the thing. A lot of people say that Rob Zombie's pretentious. And I can see a case for it in Halloween 2 because you're taking something that people know and you're twisting it too much, man. You're just forcing your ideas on the
people. I think people calling Rob Zombie pretentious is the result of Halloween 2. I don't think it was because – I don't think people called him that before Halloween came out. I think that's the reason why.
Yeah, Halloween 2? Yeah, that's the reason why they do it. Because he's forcing stuff that people don't want. He's forcing his ideas into something that's sacred.
But there's so many but he wasn't doing it before. Like, he just tried something different. I don't think that's
really – I know, and I don't think it's a fair thing to say either.
I don't think it is at all. I think he just tried something that possibly didn't really work that well. You know, it's a mistake. It's a blip in his career.
It's a big mistake, man.
It is, okay? But the thing is, I've gotten past it. Like, when Lords of Salem got announced, I was so fucking stoked. Even though, you know, I put Halloween 2 behind me, and I was like, you know what? I understand where he was coming from this, because like I said, and fuck it. I'm going to go into this film with no, you know, I'm just going to go in with an open mind. And I loved it. And that was the thing. Well,
that's another thing, though, is I don't like Halloween 2. But I love it's purely on a script base, dude. Rob Zombie is a great filmmaker, and I never went out of Halloween 2 thinking like, oh man, Rob Zombie sucks now. He's never gonna do good again. I just was like, yeah, that was a huge misstep. But the things that I love about Rob Zombie are still in there, and they're still awesome. It's just that the script and the idea for the film was just not right. But going into Lords, I was like, I never thought that Rob Zombie couldn't do a good film. Like, I knew that he could, because he showed us in House of a Thousand and Devil's Rejects and the, you know, Halloween remake. It was just a misstep. But it never at one point do you see something in there that shows a decline in filmmaking. It's just a bad idea.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's Rob Zombie's Eyes Wide Shut, you know. I referred to that to my buddy one time, and he fucking laughed so hard. I was like, because, you know, Kubrick, man, I mean, in my opinion, never really had
a bad movie,
a film in his career that was shitty. You know, it was
I never really seen.
What about Spartacus?
I like Spartacus, actually.
That's only half of his movie. You know that, right?
Oh yeah.
Mann is the other director of the first half.
But you know, it's not even the worst thing. Like, I don't think it's a terrible fucking film at all, but like, Kubrick's one of those guys that he just kind of ended his career like on a very low note. I'm not saying that Rob Zombie obviously ended his career on Halloween 2, but it's more of a joke. Let's not look into this too much.
Yeah. I think that, what the hell was I even going to say now? You got me all sidetracked.
The Eyes Wide Shut comment fucked you up.
So, shit, I'm looking forward to new Rob Zombie stuff.
I mean, that's really what it all comes down to. Like I
said, it's more than we thought we were going to get. We didn't even think we were going to get another Rob Zombie film. So
yeah, well, remember we talked about the backstory to this. He was trying to find funding for his non-horror stuff, and he was sitting there, and he said, oh, I got an idea. And he thought of something, and it was like an idea, and he pitched it to somebody and got funding right then and there. So that just goes to show, Rob, people aren't interested in your non-horror stuff. Sorry, bud. But you know,
I think it was just one of those moments in his life where he was kind of pissed off and just maybe kind of, you know, trying to go against the whole grain because he was having a rough time with the critics, and
I don't know why he made a fucking awesome movie.
I think it was really affecting him, you know, mentally and stuff. And you know, I don't honestly think he was ever going to go through with that. To be honest, I think time would have prevailed, and I think he would have gotten over it. And then, well, obviously it worked.
Well, let's be honest here. I mean, Lords of Salem wasn't like a huge success or anything. We like it, and because we always talk about it in such a positive light, sometimes we forget that it actually got very mixed reviews. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of people who didn't like it. So we talk about it and look at it like it's a great, great film, but critically wise, there's a lot of people who didn't like it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, but, a fucking horror movie.
I completely understand why people don't like, you know, this, you know, Lords of Salem is one of those films that I completely understand why people like it, and why they don't like it.
Yeah, especially the ending, man. I could see why people
would love the ending.
I know, but I could see how like critics would be like, why am I watching dudes jerking off dildos and seeing naked fat ladies?
I thought you meant the actual, like I don't love seeing guys jerking off dildos, but
yes, JP, you understand what I'm saying.
Dude, whatever, it doesn't bother me. But no, seriously.
I'm not mad 87 Rider.
No, so yeah, when me and the wife were doing a Rob Zombie day, we watched all the films, and the end of Lords of Salem, she looks at me and she goes, I don't know. What? She was so fucking confused. But that moment with that, like the way she reacted at the end of the film, and I was like, you know what? I think this might be like the sole reason why people kind of dislike this film is because it is pretty damn confusing.
Yeah.
Really?
Right? And
the ending's confusing?
I think some people kind of get lost in translation and what's going on there, and maybe they get lost in the visuals, because I think the movie's so visual that you kind of sometimes forget exactly what,
especially
you know, the ending's going a downer on. Right, like the ending's it's a downer.
Yeah, but I mean, we're not gonna, you know, give it away.
Yeah, I know, but like I was just making sure like that's the ending, right? Like
I'm
totally trying to remember 100%. Back
it is
like, why I'm not remembering it being hard to follow, but I can't really remember
it. I think it might have a lot to do with the events leading up to it, like the visuals and stuff with, like, you know, the little mini devil and, you know, the rubber penises. Like, there's a whole pile of visuals in there that are like you can't help but notice and kind of like get distracted by it.
Well, guys,
you know
I don't think we need to do a Rob Zombie show now. We just covered his like whole film career.
Are we still doing the news right now?
Yeah, we're still in the news. We got one more piece of news. I mean, I could sit here and talk about Rob Zombie all day, but I think we need to move on.
Yeah.
All right. So, Bloody Disgusting. This is an exclusive by them. They talked to Sean S. Cunningham, of course, from Crystal Lake fame. You know, Jason created Friday the 13th and, you know, House and shit. I've always never really liked Sean Cunningham. Like, he seems like the definition of, like, the producer. Like, he just is producing and he doesn't care about the art.
Mm-hmm. I think at one time that he was actually probably kind of into, you know, hence him, you know, directing films and stuff. But, yeah, I think once that portion of his career was kind of...
Well, I heard an interview with Todd Farmer once, and he said that he was writing Freddy vs. Jason originally, I think. And he said that he was writing for Sean Cunningham, and... Sean kept, he was paying him like $2,000 a month to write for him, write all these different scripts. And Sean didn't want him to do any horror. He was like, no, don't do horror. Write a story about a farm boy in this town and do this. And the reason was is because he was chasing like an Oscar or whatever, an award. Like, and I don't like that. He lost faith
in the horror films.
He only had the faith is like a financial game. Like it was never like a, and it was just like,
he was never like that huge fan.
Yeah,
of the genre,
and you even see it in the like he was. I believe Todd Farmer even said like Sean was embarrassed of horror or something. So, like, eventually he came back around to it, probably when it made money. But, you know, Sean Cunningham, even in the Crystal Lake documentaries, I remember seeing him like, you know, get that damn hockey mask off him. I hate that thing or something. Like, it was just like kind of he doesn't get it. You can tell he never really got the horror thing. It was just money to him, which is fine if you're a businessman, but that it means that I don't care for you as much in the horror world. Anyway, Bloody Disgusting interviewed Sean Cunningham and was talking about the new Friday the 13th series. And basically, some of the things he says is there will be a relationship between Pamela and Jason, and we see how all that plays out. It'll be set in like present time with flashbacks to like Pamela and the family and Jason and stuff. And it won't be set because it actually meant when you kind of think about this, it's funny. Like it won't be set specifically on Friday the 13th. And it's like, yeah, obviously, but it's kind of funny considering it's, like, game of Friday the 13th completely got away from that.
Yeah, like, when do they ever take place on Friday the 13th?
In, like, one of them.
Yeah.
Because, the second, well, I guess part one does, part two does, but isn't, like, part two, three, and four, like, all, like, in the same, like, week or something?
Yeah, possibly. Shit.
Because, like, after he gets the axe in the head, it's the same night in part four, you know? After he gets the axe in part three.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he also says, they ask him, do you have, you know, is Tommy Jarvis coming back? And he smiled and said, I'm sorry, who? And said, stay tuned. So probably Tommy Jarvis is going to be, or at least the main character, which is good for me, because I always thought that Tommy Jarvis was like the great, you know, protagonist to Jason. Nice. And then he, you know, goes on to reveal some more stuff, like, what are we going to have? Masked Jason, Baghead Jason, Zombie Jason, what are we going to have? And he says he assures the fans will be more than satisfied. Jason Voorhees is an integral part of the series and will be definitely be in character. He, you know, then goes on to say, you know, we got to figure out how the passage of time works. How does Jason age? Does Jason age? You know, so it's a lot of like technical stuff that they're working out. Like, how are they going to, you know, show us Jason? Like, what Jason is he going to be? Is there going to be Baghead Jason too? You know, which I like where their head is so far. It seems like they're weighing out all these options and they're going to figure out like what works best for this. He also says, you know, it's possible we can meet Jason's father, because he says questions about Jason's father and other characters have yet been introduced represent both an opportunity and a challenge for the writers. He also goes to say that there have been rumors floating around that Pamela had a virgin birth, and that's just wrong. So sounds like there's gonna be a
What is she, fucking the Bloody Mary? Virgin Mary. Virgin Mary, not the Bloody Mary.
The Bloody Mary.
Shows you how Jewish I am.
they also mentioned the they also mentioned the like gore factor, like the blood, you know, will the show be bloody and stuff, and he says pushing the envelope has always been a part of the Friday the 13th legacy, and I don't expect that to change. It's a great time for us. We're at a place where we can actually do a series which satisfies fans' expectations, and more importantly will allow us to tell stories which can attract or even attract an even wider audience. He goes on to say stuff about you know, sex and violence and language and stuff exist on television networks now. You know, with Hannibal, American Horror Story, Fargo, True Detective, True Blood, Walking Dead, the list goes on and on. Hold and up. I 100% agree.
Hold up. Do you really think he's going to say, oh yeah, this is going to be a giant pile of shit?
No, obviously he's saying all the things that he needs to be saying. I mean,
yeah, but, well, how do you know he's actually telling the truth?
What could he not be telling the truth about? Like,
I bet you people said about that about Jason X, and like, oh, this was. I bet you people would say, like, the people who made Jason X said the same exact thing about it when I was getting
Christ like, what? Who, I'm asking, who the fuck is the naked saying, Nancy here? Saying what? Like, what specifically?
Oh, like, fans will be satisfied with the, you know, with the way the series is going and all that.
No, but he said fans will be satisfied with the way they, you know, with the question was, you know, will we have Baghead Jason, Zombie Jason? What
he's saying, or CGI the fans will be Jason.
Satisfied. So basically, what I get from that is he's saying, like, we're probably going to do all of them. Like, we're going to have the Baghead Jason for the.
I want to know who's playing.
We're going to have the hockey mask Jason for the hockey fans, for the hockey mask fans. So, I mean, that's what I got out of it, is he's saying, like, yeah, it'll all be there. We're going to make the fans happy by showing everybody's favorite shit.
I want to know who's playing Jason.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably going to be multiple Jasons, considering.
Bring Kane back, you motherfuckers.
Yeah, I know. But, I totally understand what you're saying. He's obviously a salesman. Sean, and we stated that at the beginning when I talked about, like, my beef with Sean Cunningham a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's definitely selling it to us. But in my opinion, he's saying all the right things that I want in this. He's saying, you know, we're going to push the envelope when it comes to blood and gore and sex and violence. We're going to, you know, make sure that everybody's happy with the Baghead Jason and the hockey mask Jason. We're going to maybe answer questions about Elias Voorhees, Jason's dad. I forget his name.
I think Sean S. Cunningham's got somebody writing for him.
Yeah, but he sounds like Charles Band.
He's got that White House writer, you know. It just sounds so good, but I don't know, man.
But it's not something. But I understand what you guys are saying. But there's not really anything here that you could kind of take out of context and like be like, well, you can really twist it. He's literally saying like the like there's not really room to lie about things here.
Well, hopefully.
Like what? Like, give me an example about something he could just be bullshitting about.
The whole fucking thing?
Yeah.
But then it would just be like, it would
watch Jason's dad not even be in it, and they use like CGI blood instead of like.
I don't really see how that's like a thing. Like, you can't just say like, yeah, you know, we're gonna have Jason. You know, I don't see the point of that. What would the point of? Because you're just gonna get backlash.
No, but I mean, basically, what I'm saying is that, you know, what he's saying right now, you know, this is exactly what they want to do. It doesn't exactly mean this is what's going to happen.
But kind of, maybe he is a producer on it. Like, I mean, he has a set.
Totally. But who knows? Something might happen. They might have to change things around. We can hear all this stuff. I mean, personally, you know, I just want to check it out. You know, I don't really need to know all this previously. It's like, whatever. I mean, we're fans. We're going to check it out.
I don't know, dude. I totally disagree. I think this is like kind of what all this stuff that they're saying is exactly how I wanted the series to be. So it totally gets me like a bit more hyped for it, because I was really worried, like, what are they going to do? Are they going to turn it into something that isn't close to the series? Like, are they this is everything I wanted to hear. I want to hear that we're possibly going to have Tommy Jarvis character.
But doesn't that sound too good to be true, though?
But what would the benefit of lying about this be?
Oh, man, nothing. Here we go.
How would it benefit Sean Cunningham?
There's no benefit at all. I'm just saying, what he's saying might not be what exactly is going to happen. He's telling you everything that you want to fucking hear, but then later on down the road, when something that doesn't happen, something, you know, doesn't happen that he's saying, and he'll have a response for it.
Yeah, but I just don't see a reason for it to, you know, maybe it won't be exact, but their head is in the right place, is what I'm saying. It's like everything that he's saying doesn't have to come completely true. I'll be okay with that. But it sounds like the ideas and the concepts are where I want it to be. So I don't really see a point in saying all this for nothing. Like, there's obviously some truth to it. What would the point of saying any of this be?
No, I totally agree with you. I'm just saying it doesn't necessarily mean this is what's going to happen. You know, like, you can say anything you want, but who knows? Right? That's all what it comes down to.
Everything in the world, though.
Exactly my point. Like, how many times do you read and hear things, you're like, oh, yeah, fucking right. And then, oh, yeah, you're a little disappointed when the product comes. Who knows?
Yeah, but
I'm just playing devil's advocate.
I think it's a little different when it's like something that's already in production and that, you know, they're shopping for a channel and stuff. Like, I mean,
but it doesn't mean that that shit could get changed in a second.
But it doesn't mean that it's not either. Like,
totally, 100%, 100%.
When you have a concept for a show, I don't see like what, how drastically can it change? Like, what would the reasoning for changing something that drastically be if you're coming out and saying these things?
I don't know. Money? I don't know. It doesn't.
But what? Money? Like, how?
Like with everything, though, man, there's always things that get changed in productions, man. Like, okay,
drastically, like, that much after it's this close? Like, this isn't like something that's like, oh, you know, like, sometime down the road we're going to do all this. Like, this is production.
Have they written the actual, you know, screenplays to these, you know, episodes and stuff? Or
I think they're in the process of writing screenplays now.
So they're in the process. So anything could change right now.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
I understand that you're saying anything can change, but really, do you think it's going to change like that drastically, though, to be a completely different show?
Not drastically.
If this is their idea behind it, and it's like they're going with that idea, so they're talking about this idea. That seems like it's the idea they're going with. Why would they be talking about all this stuff if he was nervous that they was going to change so much of it?
Well, because you got to get fucking people like you to be like, oh, yeah, this is exactly what I fucking want. You know, like, he's fucking, you know, it's like with anything. I mean, who knows? He didn't say specifically what he's going to do with the Jason thing. But I mean, what are you leaning towards? You said fans aren't going to be disappointed, so we're going to see the Jason mask?
No, the question was, you know, what kind of Jason are we getting? Mask Jason, Baghead Jason, both? Mm-hmm. And he says, I assure that the fans will be more than satisfied, because Jason is the most integral part of the series and will definitely be in character.
that response is too perfect. It's too perfect.
So yeah, maybe we'll obviously you can't. But the thing is, like, you can't say too much. You can't say definitively this is what we're doing. But you can see that their ideas are in the right place, is what I'm saying. Like, yeah, it can change a bit. But if all of their ideas are surrounded in this one area, why would they say them if they didn't have? Because me just being hyped isn't gonna really, you know, once the show comes out, it's not like a movie where once people see it, then they make their money. You have to consistently bring people back. So I think it's a little different with a TV show that you're expecting people to show up week after week. Then you can't really just straight up lie about these things and change everything, because people will go away.
Well, I mean, of course you couldn't, you know, with after shit starts airing and all that type of bullshit. But I mean, leading up to it, man, anything can change. Who knows?
I understand everything can change, but it seems like you guys are saying like this is. It feels like you guys think it's more like mostly bullshit.
No. I'm not saying it's mostly bullshit at all. I'm just saying everything sounds exactly too perfect. That's all I'm saying. You know, like he's saying pretty much exactly what you want to hear, but. You know, deep down inside, I got to question a little bit. I mean, of course you're going to hype up things. I mean, there's been millions of cases where, you know, you've heard one thing is going to happen and then it doesn't really happen like that. And you're like, oh, okay. But maybe this is one of those cases. Maybe it's not.
I understand. But with this much information all laid out, it almost seems like counterproductive to then change it. Like it's gonna be more work to change.
But this is but this is written on paper though, right? Like you said, the scripts and stuff are not written, you know, so they could.
I don't know. They might. I don't know for sure.
But I mean, yeah, who knows?
They said they will be releasing more information around Comic-Con. So I mean, that's what, like this summer. I honestly don't think they're gonna stray too far away from the stories and concepts that they have.
I mean, I hope not. But the thing is, I hate getting my hopes up too high about something and then, you know, absorbing all this awesome, you know, information. You're just like, fuck yeah. You know, and then all of a sudden it comes out and you're like, expecting.
But the thing is, even if they did do all this stuff and they did everything that I want, it still could be a bad show just based on casting. You know, I'm like excited because Friday the 13th is my favorite series. And, you know, I know who Sean Cunningham is, but to me, this stuff sounds like it's really where they're going. Like it sounds like the territory they're going, because I don't see a point to have all of these different ideas that are all similar and to not go that way then.
Touche, you know, but I'm just saying, you know, I want it to work. I mean, I don't want anybody out there listening to be like, oh, Moods fucking doesn't want this shit to work. No, of course I want it to work. But at the same time, you know, coming out of Sean Cunningham's mouth, you know, it's like, I mean,
so
honestly,
it sounds like to me that I kind of convinced you guys that Sean Cunningham is kind of like a money guy.
Well, it's not even that. I mean, you know, I've always had kind of, you know, my own thoughts on him, but you know, I mean, honestly, so if Charles Band was responsible for this whole fucking franchise and he was saying all this shit, would you be 100% convinced? You're like, that he's saying all this shit?
Honestly, yeah, because I wouldn't be 100% convinced, like, because I'm never convinced until I see it. But I would be like, okay, because it doesn't sound like things that would even make sense to lie about. Like, I just, it doesn't seem like there would be any benefit to him at all. In fact, it would actually hurt him if none of these things did happen or most of them didn't happen. So I think that he's coming out and saying this publicly to a huge outlet that it has to be where they're leaning.
Well, I mean, all I can say is hopefully. Yeah. Right? It just sounds exactly what I want to be hearing. And I always get a little weary when I hear shit like that. I'm like, are you serious, man? That's exactly what I wanted.
But the thing
that never happens in life. life is always throwing you curveballs, you know? And it's like, I mean, give me a fucking break. When something's too good to be true, it never fucking is.
But this like doesn't seem like too true, good to be true, though. It seems like naturally where it should go. I think that it would be a bit different if it was like this is coming from somebody who wants his TV show to succeed, obviously. So and also it's coming from somebody who I don't think would know the right things to say. Like I think he's kind of out of tune with fans. And
okay, let's go back about 17 minutes or 27
yeah,
or 30
seconds. We've been literally talking about this for like 25 minutes.
Once again, it does sound like Sean Cunningham has a writer.
But listen, remember when I said like he's like he doesn't get horror? So I don't think that he would know these things to say like if he was trying to just like falsely lead the hardcore Jason fans to the well.
I mean, dude, I completely 100% concur with everything you're saying. But all I'm saying is that sometimes I get a little skeptical when shit is totally spoon-fed. It's like, oh, this is how you want it? Oh, there it is.
I just didn't see it that way. Like, I just saw it as like...
I think like, it's probably because maybe...
You got to also look at it this way. The guy asking him these questions are coming from the perspective of, you know, us. So... Mm-hmm. It sounds like, you know, he's not telling us all the stuff that we're not looking for. You know what I'm saying? He's only answering the questions we're asking him. So there could be a whole bunch more that we don't know that is like kind of stuff that we wouldn't want in it. But he's only asking him the questions that we really care about. So we only are seeing what he's asking.
Yeah, which worries me.
Yeah. I don't know.
Right?
I kind of have faith in this show.
I mean, totally. Like I said, like I don't want people to think that I'm not, you know, knocking this. But at the same time, I understand your point. I just hope you get mine too, though.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely.
Get you're like fuck you. You're like you, man.
I think you guys are looking at it like he's out to get you, and I think that's like
no, not at all, not at all. Maybe I just don't trust him. You know, maybe I just don't think that.
But it's like, not only him either. Like, this, he's just one of the producers. Like, there's so many cooks in the kitchen on this one.
This week's question is top five post-2000 vampire films. Who wants to read the list?
I got them. I got the top five list. Yeah, top five post-2000 vampire films. Wow, man. So many people said this was so fucking hard. And I totally agree. That's why I had the question. All right, first up, Movie Buff Mike, which I will give a shout out to. I will leave the link down in the description on him too. He's a brand new YouTuber. I believe I was the very first person to subscribe to him. So, on that note, he needs more subscribers. So check him out. He's actually pretty cool, man. I check out a few of his videos. Pretty cool stuff. Anyways, top five. This really cracked me up. I think this is a joke. Honorable mention, the Twilight films. He's totally joking. They're so bad. They're hilarious. Number five. This got my attention. Let the Right One In. Number five. But then he put in brackets. Overrated, but still decent enough.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of surprised on that one.
Yeah, I actually questioned. I was like, holy shit, man.
For one of the best vampire movies ever made, not just post-2000s,
yeah,
it's one of the best vampire films ever made.
I thought it was really interesting to call it overrated, but I did question it in the comments. But yeah, everyone has their own opinion. Number four, I Am Legend. Number three,
what?
Yeah,
I Am Legend under Let the Right One In.
How is that a vampire film?
Because it is.
Really?
Yeah, that's vampire. Is. The original story was vampires, I believe.
All right.
It's kind of like zombies, but they're
vampires. I thought they were zombies.
You know why it feels like zombies is because it's a zombie film with vampires. Like all the typical things like the overrun city and stuff, it's all looks like a zombie film. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Number three, 30 Days of Night. Number two, which I have no idea what this is, Vampire Hunter D, Bloodlust.
What kind of name is that?
I guess it is. He says it's a solid anime film. So I personally have seen like four anime films in my life. So
yeah, not a big
don't fan. Know it. And number one, Shadow of the Vampire, which I have not seen before. I have heard a few people talk about
this. Is that the Klaus Kinski movie? Kinski?
No, it's got William Dafoe and John Malkovich in it.
Oh no, that's Nosferatu. That's right. That's that's the film that's about making Nosferatu.
Yeah. Jeffy D, which I like his name, Jeffy D. It's awesome. Number five, Daybreakers. I've never actually seen before. Number four, Underworld, which I can't say was a fan of, but that's just me. Number three, which is he put both of them in there, Nightwatch/Daywatch, which are fantastic fucking choices, by the way. Number two, Shadow of the Vampire, and number one, Let the Right One In. Very cool. Getting ahead of myself here. Lost Witch Adrian, our boy Adrian. Number five, he put Lost Boys, the opposite of the one I didn't like. So
The Thirst.
So yeah, The Thirst, okay. Number four, Queen of the Damned.
Was that 90s? Queen of the Damned?
I think it was 2000 or 2001. I think it was right in the early 2000s.
Jeremy, quit fucking typing.
Well, if you see what I was typing, then you would know.
Number three, Underworld. Number two, 30 Days of Night. And number one, Diabolique. Apparently, it's a 2013 art house film. I have not seen that, so that is intriguing. Critter Buster. Number five, Let the Right One In. Mm-hmm. Number four, Steaklands, and I almost shit my fucking pants on this one. Number three, Fright Night Remake.
Number three? who did that one?
Critter Buster.
Critter, dude, Critter is my homie, man. Critter always kind of has, like, I look at his list and I'm like, yep.
Oh, fuck, dude. Like, okay, well, like I said, I'm not knocking Critter at all for having it in there. It's just I personally cannot stand the film. But number two, Let Me In, which is interesting. He's got the original and the remake in there. Number one, 30 Days a Night. Paul Henderson, number five, Blood Creek. That's a cool choice. Number four, Byzantium. Number three, Dracula, Pages from a Virgin's Diary.
What kind of title is that?
I actually don't know that one. That's great that I don't know that. Number two, Frostbitten, which I've always wanted to see. He says he believes it's a Swedish film. I think it is. It's either Swedish or, it's some Scandinavian film. And number one, Kiss of the Damned. Kiss of the Damned. Cool. You have to see that one. Uner Horror Movies. Number five, Blade 2. Interesting. Number four, Suck. Number three, Shadow of the Vampire. Number two, 30 Days a Night. And number one, Let the Right One In. It's the first time I see Blade on this list.
Mm-hmm. Blade is a 90s film.
Blade 2.
Oh, Blade 2.
Yeah. I think Blade 2 came out in...
It's like 2000 something.
2000.
Yeah. Number five, from Dubby Doubles, our boy Dubby.
Hey, he's kind of been dead lately.
Yeah. Number five, Underworld. Once again, Underworld. Number four, Decadent Evil 2. That's the fucking most interesting choice. That's cool. Number three, Nightwatch. Number two, Blade 2. And number one, 30 Days of Night. Now, that's a really interesting list. Movie Collector 666. Zach, number six, Blade.
Which is a 90s film.
Which actually, yeah, is totally from the 90s. Number five, Daybreakers. Once again, I've never seen it. Number four, Let the Right One In. Number three, Steakland. Number two, Thirst. And he gives you a special shout out, JP, for reminding him about that one. Yep. And number one, 30 Days of Night. And that is everybody.
Really?
No, yeah. We got one more. We got Martin. He actually emailed us his answers.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So number five is Livid. Number four is Merbito. Something? I don't know. Number three is Shadow of the Vampire. Number two is 30 Days of Night. And number one is Let the Right One In.
So I basically got to see Shadow of the Vampire because...
And Kiss of the Damned.
Yeah, and Kiss of the Damned.
I've heard good things about both of those before this list.
Cool, man. Got to check those out. So your guys' list. JP, you want to go first?
Sure, why not? My list, little... Side note, Moods wouldn't let me put Stoker on my list because he said it wasn't a real vampire film, so that's not on here. He literally said I wasn't allowed.
Okay.
Yeah, so number five, The Lost Boys of the Thirst, which that's the one you did like, Adrian. and then number four is Fright Night, the remake.
Nice.
Oh, really?
God.
You know that was going to piss
me
off.
Dude, Fright Night is pretty awesome.
Oh, man. I am not going to lie, man. I like the sequel better than the original one.
Dude, I really was so – I remember sitting in the theater waiting for Scream 4, and the Fright Night trailer came up, and I was like – I was literally pissed. I was talking to my friends who wasn't into horror. I was like, this is why they shouldn't fucking remake stuff, because it turned – I was like really angry at this point in my life. I was like basically shitting on it, and then it came out on Redbox, and like my pap rented it, and I just like was so bored I decided to pop it in. I was like, dude, that was pretty damn awesome. So I like Fright Night. I like Fright Night a lot. It's fun. Nice. After that, number three, we have Thirst. That's a Chan Wook Park film that I really, really enjoyed. Just watched that recently. Then we have number two is 30 Days of Night. And then number one, of course, Let the Right One In, which is honestly in my probably top five vampire films of all time.
Yeah, same. It's good.
Cool. Jeremy?
All right. My number five pick is Blade 2. Then I have Thirst as my number four pick. Three, I have Stakeland. Two, I have Kiss of the Damned. And one, I have Let the Right One In.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. I haven't seen Stakeland or Daybreakers.
I have an extra DVD copy. I could send it to you.
I have Daybreakers.
Right. Number five for me, Stakeland. I cheated on number four and I put Night Watch, Day Watch, both the films, because I could not choose which one I liked better. I actually liked both those films like a ton. They're basically like one big ass film. Very cool stuff though. Number three, 30 Days a Night. Number two,
See,
by
and he
Byzantium.
Said he doesn't cheat. Once again, he cheated.
I did. I cheated a couple times. Yeah. Yeah. So
number See, you two, don't even know you're doing it.
He's like just cheating, like, you know, just acting like it didn't even happen. Just like, yeah, I cheated. And then he moves on, like thinking we're just not going to say anything for the cheater.
Well, that's why I kind of gave it up to a Jeffy D vet down there. And, you know, he did Night Watch, Day Watch too. And I thought that was funny because I did the same thing. Number two, Byzantium, which I highly recommend. I can't believe it was on more people's list. Fuck, that movie's good.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people have still seen it. That's pretty new, isn't it?
Yeah, it came out last year. And number one, Let the Right One In.
Of course. How can you go against
it? It's just so damn good. It's so good.
It honestly blew me away when I seen it. I was so impressed by it, dude. The visuals and the just cinematography, the lighting, the snow, the everything, man. It looks so good. I need a Blu-ray. Mm-hmm.
Nice. All right. So for next week question, and I basically have not even decided what I'm going to do for the next top five. Oh, no one's going to blurt out anything. Okay.
Let's do top five favorite horror titles. That means the name of the movie.
Okay. Yeah. We'll do top five horror film titles. Yeah. And that's what it is, man.
Vampircon.
If that was a real film, that
if that was a real film, that'd be a contender.
Yeah. So your top five horror film titles of all time.
Retard Dad, Retard of the Dead. What is it, Moods?
Retard Dead.
Retard Dad.
If we was doing worse titles, that might make the cut.
That is a good one though. Oh yeah. So yeah, so top five horror film titles. Everyone make sure to answer that one for next week.
Do you have any mood swings?
We have a couple cues.
We have a couple what? Oh, questions. No. Do we want – oh, you know what? Fuck it. I'll do the Corners Report right now. The Rumor Corners Report, weird stats and morbid facts. I basically grabbed an old one out of my stack, opened it up, and then the first thing I saw reminded me of Jeremy. So I thought I would do this one as a weird stat and morbid fact of the week. This is pertaining to the 1956 original film, The Bad Seed. So it says, in the wake of The Bad Seed's 1956 theatrical release, all children were banned from movie houses where the film was screening.
the U.S. Film Classification Board cited its concerns about potential copycat violence. Are you fucking serious? I laughed so hard when I was reading this.
This was like, after the Hague Code. That's so weird that like they were doing that.
Yeah, they actually, like, kids were not allowed to see the movie. I was like, holy fuck.
How about when, this is kind of off topic, but when Alfred Hitchcock made Psycho, he wouldn't allow people to go in after the film started.
Yeah.
That shit would never fly today, dude. That would never happen. They'd be like, oh, I don't care. I don't care. You totally. Go in the last 5 minutes and give me money.
You could never fucking, totally.
You would never a studio would never allow that today.
Same with, like, Smell-O-Vision and all that shit. I never think that would be, like, a success today, like all the gimmicks they used to be. Have you watched The Matinee with John Goodman?
How fucking awesome was Hitchcock, man? It's like, I don't want your money. I care about art. You got to see the movie in full. That is fucking awesome.
Yeah. We will get into the DVD releases right now. Coming out this Tuesday. Now, this is... this better not spark another hour conversation, but Rob Zombie's releasing a thing called the Zombie Horror Picture Show. Uh-huh. And it's basically... it's like his version of Pink Floyd's The Wall kind of thing. I think it's something like that. It's on the same level. It's a music, it's a live performance, you know, with horror stuff going on. So I thought that actually sounded really fucking cool. I'd like to check that out. After Dark Originals is releasing their brand new release, Mischief Night, which I think I've actually heard pretty good things about. For all you Scream Factory freaks out there, like us. Nosferatu is coming out this Tuesday. Apparently, it's getting mixed reviews already based on transfer and stuff. But fuck, whatever, man. I remember hearing, you know, bad things about a couple other films that they'd released about the transfers, and they look pretty damn good to me. Low budget film called Chainsaw Killer. Seriously, who doesn't want to watch a film called Chainsaw Killer? That sounds amazing. Now, this one right here, I'm not 100% sure what the deal is with it. It's called Camp Blood First Slaughter. I don't know if this has anything to do, if this is like a spinoff from the original Camp Blood films. This was done by David Sterling Productions. Cool Duder's buddy, David Sterling. The guy's produced like hundreds and hundreds of films, man. It's crazy.
The Camp Blood movies.
Is his name Charles Band?
Charles Band, yeah. But I'm not sure if this is like a new kind of franchise thing that he's starting, or if this is actually related to the original Camp Blood films. I'm not 100% sure. But anyways, that looked kind of cool. I don't know if you guys remember, a couple months back, 3-4 months back, they released a set called Box of the Bigfoot. And it was basically three Bigfoot films, you know, in this little box. But anyways, they're releasing the sequel of it, Box of Bigfoot 2. Sasquatch Attack.
So, how many good Bigfoot films are there?
Like, well, there's not that many great ones, but they're still pretty entertaining to watch. I don't know.
There's so many.
Yeah, there is. And these sets are really, really cheap, man. You can get them for like under $10 on Amazon. Like, they're crazy cheap. Next one, I actually saw Mr. Parker do a review for this film called Blood March Crack. It's literally about a raccoon on crack. It's fucking. He actually said it wasn't that great, but for anybody who wants to check it out,
crack.
Yeah, dude, it's called Blood Marsh Crackoon.
I don't even know how that works.
I don't know, man.
Does the raccoon like smoke the crack?
I don't know. Maybe he's. I have no fucking clue. Does it matter? The raccoon's on crack.
No, I just want to know if there's a scene of a raccoon smoking crack somewhere in the world, like that. That would kind of blow my mind.
Too good. Evil Dead Steelbook coming out this Tuesday. If anyone's interested in picking up the Evil Dead Steelbook, I'm sure there's some people out there willing to pick it up. And then the one film that I was really curious about this week was called Rays, featuring Zoe Bell, of course, from, you know, Death Proof fame. But this one sounds really cool.
IFC Midnight one?
It's released by IFC Midnight, so I know that's going to pique Jeremy's interest.
Oh, but it
looks pretty badass, though. I think the Tourist Trap Blu-ray is finally getting officially released this Tuesday, which I've heard nothing but bad things about already. I heard there's some issues with the transfer. It's like jumping around and stuff. I don't really know what to think of that because I've heard some people say that they had no issues with theirs. I don't know if it's certain copies. I don't know what the fuck's going on. But anyways, Tourist Trap coming out from Blue.
That wasn't the problem with the transfer.
What was...
It was cut. They cut 5 minutes out of the film.
Out of our release? Or I know 88 Films was
cut. No, that was out of our release.
Oh, what the fuck? Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, that's bullshit.
Did you read that link? I'll send you the link. I swear, like...
Okay, I thought that was the 88 Films release, because I know theirs is cut, too.
Like, 5 minutes got cut?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And last one, if anyone's interested, it sounds like shit, looks like shit, but it's called Vampire Academy.
Oh, yeah, I heard this movie got trashed on.
Yeah, it looks fucking terrible. I don't know. It just looks awful, but if anyone's interested... Vampire Academy, terrible cover art, just horrible. So anyways, that's gonna do it for the releases that I can see this Tuesday.
All right, JP, want to ask the questions that the fans asked us?
Don't call them fans.
Okay, viewers.
Yeah. Lost Witch Adrian asks, is there any film that you want in your collection but you can't grab? So probably stuff that's like out of print or just
Clown Hunt.
Clown House?
Clown House. Not Clown Hunt. That movie's fucking horrendous.
Don't I was buy like, really? You want like Clown Hunt is the go-to film that you want in your collection really bad?
Clown House and Ghost Town.
Yeah, Ghost Town. That's one that's never been released.
Yeah, right? It's a Full Moon movie.
Yeah, I seen that when I was a kid, actually. Mine is probably my number one right now. Was probably Halloween the Producer's Cut, but now it's actually probably Tales from the Hood.
Yeah, it's not that rare.
Yeah, but it's just I don't want to buy that edition because I know it'll probably get re-released one day.
It's an HBO movie though. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, I think that, besides that, maybe, I don't know. I have Tales from the Hood on VHS, so I'm, like, not really, like, need it. So probably Clown House. Clown House would be a nice one to have.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Moods? What film do you want in your collection that you can't grab?
To be honest, man, I think it would have to be Rawhead Fred.
Yeah, not Evil Ed.
Actually, fuck, dude.
Actually, you took that right out of my mind. You actually that pulled that shit. Also, because I've been wanting to see that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what?
It's getting a Blu-ray release. It's getting a special edition treatment.
Region 1?
Yeah.
Yeah. You go to Diabolik DVD right now. They have a couple different editions of it. I think one comes with the Blu-ray, CD soundtrack and stuff. And
yeah.
They're it's pretty out? Expensive. No, no.
It's not out.
They're out for pre-order right now.
Yeah, it's Region 1.
Yes.
I'm going to be grabbing one.
I've known this. This was like a month ago, JP.
Yeah.
Dude, my mind is like fried right now. I'm hot as fuck in this house.
but Jeremy, you totally just grabbed that right out of my mouth. That was the next thing I was going to say. Evil Ed, Rawhead Fred. Yeah, rhymes. Look at that. those are a couple of films that I can't fucking find anywhere.
I can't find Clown House anywhere.
Clown House is another one.
Yeah, because Clown House probably isn't going to get a re-release anytime soon.
Yeah, probably not. I know that's just not cool.
I've been trying to grab the Laserdisc, the DVD everywhere. I just want to fucking have that movie.
You know what else is not cool?
Cocaine.
Molesting your lead actor.
Yeah.
it generally doesn't work out in the long run. Now,
if you molest your actor, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
You're going to have a bad time.
It's like French frying when you share a pizza.
Yeah. Going to have a bad time.
So yeah, next question is, what's your favorite foreign language and black and white horror film?
Favorite foreign language horror film?
Yeah.
Inside, hands down. It's my
favorite. Probably Let the Right One In.
Favorite foreign language? Oh my! Wow.
Inside is so good.
It's such a broad. Wow, I watched so many. Oh man, it's so hard. Holy shit, dude! I don't know. That is a hard question. I think I read that question earlier. I thought it said favorite foreign language. I was going to say Spanish. I was like, Spanish by far is my favorite language.
It does say that, but I think what it does say, what's your favorite foreign language, comma, black and white horror film. So I just thought he was saying like foreign language film and black and white film.
Man, that question is so hard. Okay.
I know my favorite black and white.
What is it?
Freaks.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mine's Psycho. No, yeah.
I love Freaks. That movie's so good.
No, you live dead in Psycho. Or just
one of my professors wrote a thesis on that film. It's so good. I love that film.
Yeah, Freaks is awesome.
Yeah, it's so good.
Mode's
favorite black and white film?
It would be Psycho because...
No, I think it would be Frankenstein or Dracula from Moods.
You had Psycho as in your top 30, right? That was the only black and white film in your top 30?
Yeah, it's funny because I was actually just referring to my list. And it's interesting because I end up taking out Frankenstein from 31 out of my list. But Psycho is still higher. So I'm going to have to go with Psycho.
But what about foreign language?
Foreign language. Man, I know that's so fucking hard.
Just pick one you like.
Pick something that I love.
Inside Man.
Oh man,
let the right one in, man.
If we're gonna get on that whole French thing, I'm gonna probably say, The Iron Rose by Gene Roland.
That's a boring pick because I don't even know what that is.
It's not a boring pick.
It's boring if you don't know what it is. Pick Inside. Yeah, man, pick.
And you didn't pick like Suspiria. Right, you didn't pick Suspiria or you That's know. Not,
well, I guess
yes, it is.
It is foreign language.
It's Italian
originally, right? Yeah. I mean, it is dubbed. Is there an Italian version?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Because a lot of those things, they would just like straight up just dub it right away without even putting out
It's in Italian.
Yeah, I don't know. It that's such a hard question, man. So I just went with something by Gene Roland because I can watch Roland films all the time. They're great.
Anything else, JP?
Yeah, there's one other question. Most anticipated forthcoming Scream Factory release. I
know this one.
And see, Halloween, I really want to see that producer's cut, but I think I'm still more excited for Pumpkinhead.
Nah, Nightbreed, man. Nightbreed. Even though it's not
more about Nightbreed, maybe.
Even though it's not the Cabal cut, it's you know that Moods, right? It's not the Cabal cut.
Yeah, which is a good thing from what I understand because it's the Cabal cut is like 3 hours long.
It's a director's cut.
Yeah, which is what it should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's a totally different cut of it. It's like Clive Barker like sat down and like recut the movie the way he wanted it.
Yeah, which is what like the Cabal cut was just every piece of shit they could find.
Yeah.
Like from VHSs and shit all spliced together.
Yeah. But yeah, Nightbreed for sure.
Yeah, that's a good Nightbreed, Halloween 6 and Pumpkinhead are probably my 3.
Yeah.
Besides the whole Halloween box set, I think that's pretty damn cool, but The Final Terror is something I've been looking forward to. Deadly Eyes, which everybody knows I'm such a huge Killer Rat freak, so I've been waiting for Deadly Eyes. When they announced that, I almost shit my pants.
Yeah.
That was fucking super cool. I was like, damn, a fucking Killer Rat film? That's actually a good one on Blu-ray. This is amazing. And Without Warning, actually, is the other one that I'm really, really excited for. And the reason why I'm excited for these is because they've never had releases before, any of these films in Region 1. So, I mean, that's what I'm looking forward to is these films that I don't own already. And, I mean, honestly, dude, I love, like, Ginger Snaps and I love Motel Hell and I Leviathan and The Legend of Hell House. What else is coming out? Dog Soldiers, fucking Nightbreed, Lord of Illusions. All these films I actually own, Pumpkinhead 1 and 2. I have all these films on DVD and stuff. But the ones I'm really, really fucking ecstatic for is Deadly Eyes and Without Warning and, you know, The Final Terror. You know, these are brand new additions to my collection.
That's interesting.
It's a brand new addition to my collection, and I think it's really stoked. And I shouldn't actually look past House in the Alley. I know this movie's only getting a DVD release, but at the same time, it's a brand new film to me, which I've never seen before. And so I'm really stoked for that too. And you know what? I can't look past Monkey's Paw because I think that.
I'm actually looking forward to that one too. But see, my thing, the reason I went with these picks is because, okay, Pumpkinhead, for example, I know it's a good film.
Those films that
you mentioned, I don't know that they're good. So I am excited to see them. But I can't, no matter what, I'm always going to be more excited for something that I know I'm going to love.
I mean, everybody knows how much I loved A Blind Buy. I mean, I have a series of best of Blind Buys and stuff. So I think, you know, I've never seen The Final Terror before. I will admit that. So basically, me buying it is going to be a blind buy. Like I've never
and you have such a huge collection that anytime you could add something new.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And I get so excited for anything that is, you know, never been released from the 80s. Yeah. You know, and that gets me just so excited, man. 80s films that never had releases.
Wasn't one of those not even on VHS or some shit?
I think The Final Terror was released on VHS. I know Deadly Eyes definitely was. Without Warning, I believe, was also. So yeah, I think so. I think all those were, but I don't know. But yeah, that's what I look forward to in Screen Factory, man, is those type of releases.
Yeah, for sure. I totally get it. I just got to go with Pumpkinhead because, dude, imagine that Blu-ray. It's just going to be...
Or it can look like garbage.
I actually don't think the Pumpkinhead, because even the DVD, well, both DVD, I think they look pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
I think they could pull some, you know, get a good
negative
and just go from there with it. And yeah, I think it'll be pretty good, man.
It's very dark, so I'm very optimistic about it.
Well, I don't know, man, dude. The Pumpkinhead, I think this Blu-ray is gonna look fantastic because, oh man, it's just so. I can't even talk. the lighting and the fog and stuff. Like, if the Blu-ray looks good, it's just gonna be like pure heaven.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Only time will tell, my friends.
I think Pumpkinhead is one of the most strongest atmospheres in a film that I've ever experienced. So, like, seeing it as clear as possible is like gonna just be awesome to me.
I've seen it in 35mm. It's fucking awesome.
And I love the artwork for Pumpkinhead. The new artwork and the, like, all artwork. Every artwork that's ever been done for Pumpkinhead is awesome.
It's the artwork from, it's been released a long time ago.
It looks
good. Yeah, man. The new Pumpkinhead artwork is so totally fucking badass, man.
Yeah, exactly what I wanted. It's, like, actually one of the thing that I think that could have been better if, like, way in the background on the cabin, if maybe, like, the old woman was sitting on the porch or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They haven't released Pumpkinhead 2 yet.
Yeah. Well, it'll be just like regular artwork because it's not a collector's edition.
Yeah, wouldn't that be awesome if it was a collector's edition?
No, man. Yeah, I mean, Pumpkinhead 2 is not a great movie, but
I know
I'm oddly excited for that release. It's so weird because I don't like love
Pumpkinhead 2 isn't going to be a collector's edition. Actually,
I've said wouldn't it be weird if it was a collector's edition?
Oh, if it was, and I thought that was actually kind of interesting. That, you know, I think that would have been super cool if they released both as collector's editions like they did with Psycho 2 and 3. I think that would have been pretty cool, but I actually forgot about one Screen Factory release I'm really curious to see. I believe it came out last year. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but The Battery.
Hmm.
Wait, they're releasing The Battery?
Yeah, and I thought that was so intriguing because...
Nuh-uh, dude, I've heard so much good stuff about that film. It was like made on like $6,000 or so, or $12,000.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of good things about it too, which is very intriguing to me, but it's not like a... It's not a chiller original, it's not a sci-fi...
This is a film that's been out for a while, and I forget who's in it. Somebody's in it.
So we just got a release in, you know, Region 1, so last year, 2013. When was the film actually done?
2012.
Okay. So it made its way over here like a year later. Cool.
Yeah. I didn't even... How did I miss that they was releasing The Battery? That's so weird. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I knew it and I just wasn't paying attention or something. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm saying like... It's saying like later, I think in the fall time or whatever. from what I remember. But
Scream Factory's on a roll, man.
Yeah, they are. I mean, goddamn.
Now they got to do a collector's edition of People Under the Stairs, and I'll be happy for a while.
That has to be before long, though, or not. Like, I don't see how – maybe they're just holding on to that one as one of their tentpole titles when they need it. Like, it's MGM. Like, I don't see how they wouldn't get a hold of that. It's Wes Craven.
Arrow has it. It's like, oh, come on.
But doesn't? But isn't that different? That's there's different rights in the UK, though.
Mm-hmm.
So – I don't think that even affects...
I think Arrow's releasing the Super Mario Brothers movie.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
I think Scream Factory will eventually release People Under the Stairs. Yeah. I honestly think someday they're going to release Dolls also.
Yeah.
I think Dolls is going to get a release by them. So I kind of held off from buying the 88.
Same with Lords of Illusion.
Wait, that is getting released.
Lord of Illusion is getting released.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Shows you how much I fucking pay attention.
I actually want to say that this Halloween set was actually their 100th film that they've released, because I think they had 99, like, individual titles, like, even counting the bonus movie.
When the fuck did Lords of Illusion get announced?
That was a while back.
Actually, a few months back, yeah.
Yeah.
Really? I don't see it on their website.
It's part of the Summer of Fear, I believe.
I don't think it has an actual release date, but I remember it being fall time or something like that. So
yeah, so anyway, that's it for the questions. Long episode.
Yep, 2 hours and 7 minutes in, and now we're just getting to pick of the weeks. All right, who wants to go first other pick of the week?
I'll go.
All right,
my pick of the week is Storm Warning from the year 2007. This is the only other film that I watched this week. Luckily, it was pretty awesome. And it follows a girlfriend-boyfriend as they are fishing out in where is this location?
Well, it's in Australia, and I believe it's not in the outback. I don't know. It's like a
Andrew corrected me on that.
Yeah, I think it's I don't know. It's like a river kind of. I don't know. It's not the outback though.
Yeah, they're fishing somewhere, and it's in like the backwoods, basically. You know what? Like,
yeah,
around here would be the backwoods, like redneck territory. And there's pretty much like a storm, so they and their boat gets messed up, so they have to kind of, you know, like, find a place to go. They go into a house. They don't think that it's anybody's home, so they just decide to go in. Eventually, a pair of brothers return to the house. And it just turns out that they went into the wrong house, because these are some like backwoods hick type guys who are very nasty. So it's basically their fight for survival when they are held hostage with these in these backwood hicks house. So yeah, Storm Warning is really, really awesome. Now, one of my biggest complaints with it was just it. At certain times it felt like it went over the top. And I know Moods disagrees on that. And I'm kind of curious to almost like how. Because to me, anytime you're doing these like crazy contraptions with like fish hooks and fishing line, and it like throws you across the room, and you know, it's so far-fetched that it's hard for me to take it serious.
Uh-huh. I understand where you're coming from with that, but I didn't think it was to the point where I was like, oh, you know, like, you know, you're just like losing your shit over it and stuff. And like, I don't know, man. I just, of course, a lot of these things can be considered far-fetched, but I didn't think it was to the point where it was like,
it's just, you know, so much. Nobody could do that. Like, you can't build something that does that. That's not real.
Why not? I don't know.
Can you, like, can you do it? Cause if you can, let's see you do it. Make a video. Get
dude. I am Johnny fucking Engineer, man.
Bullshit. Totally. Not only, but it's not. I would be okay with one of those, but there's more. Like the what do they call those? The wind machine things, the swamp thingies. You know what I'm talking about? The riding things, where you like ride it and it has the big fan on the back. Moods, you said what it was called.
Oh, the the hydro boats or whatever,
whatever the hell it is. Even that, like, that the whole like way that happened was also just kind of like a similar situation where it's like all these things have to line up, and like It's like one of those like Rube Goldberg machines or something, where it's just like it's a little over the top, and it kind of takes me out of the movie. Like all these contraptions and stuff.
I thought it was just kind of, I don't know. I'm just so rooting for, you know, the fucking wife to just kick some ass.
You know what
it
kind of reminded me of a bit? The microwave scene in Last House on the Left remake. Like, that is the type of stuff that it is.
But that was kind of out of context. Like, it just didn't need to be there. I think the whole movie was kind of, you know, maybe a little over the top, but it was on a constant level of what was happening that it was like, whatever. In Last House on the Left, when all of a sudden you put, you know, the microwave scene, it's like, really? It just didn't need to be there.
Uh-huh.
It was as simple as, like, it just didn't need to be there.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of what it reminded me of. I agree that it's way, way worse than Last House on the Left. But, you know, that was really my only issue, was every time I was seeing these, like, contraptions, I was like, I don't like stuff like that too much. Like, even when Nancy's setting all her traps in Elm Street, like, it kind of is just something that I don't like to see too much. It just seems a little far-fetched to me when they set all these booby traps and stuff.
I kind of like booby traps, man. I mean, The Goonies is my favorite non.
Yeah, but that's a different context, because it's like pirates and shit.
Booby traps. Yeah. Booby traps.
I believe that's a second time we referenced the booby trap thing on the show.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean,
shows you how
it's still a fantastic movie. Obviously, it's my pick of the week. Yes, we are all very big Goonies fans. Like, yeah, it's my favorite movie of all time.
Shows you how big of a fan we are of the Goonies. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that was my only issues, and honestly, they're not like big issues. Like, I can deal with them. It's just my like number one complaint. It's almost my only complaint.
But like, some of the kills were pretty damn good. The setting,
yeah, they're cool, you know, kills, but they look like something that would belong in like Wrong Turn 2, and not like a serious movie like this.
Well, I mean, they weren't that bad, like CGI'd that bad.
No, like, I'm not talking about CG. I'm just talking about like how ridiculous the idea that this chick can create, like, make this giant ass. It wasn't just like a little contraption. Like, it was this giant thing that lifted a full grown man off the floor with like fishing line, and so it was just like insane. Like, she would never be able to do that.
That makes me laugh though. That's funny. It's a good movie though.
No, it's a very good movie. I really, really like Storm Warning. 7.5 out of 10.
But you gotta admit though, man, the fucking wife in that film
very,
is like
very unlikable characters, man. Even the boyfriend was very unlikable to me.
Well, that's the thing. Like, she was like, she had bigger fucking balls than her boyfriend, man.
Yeah, way bigger balls.
Yeah.
Kind of like, I like, she's like the only likable character. Like, you actually hate the bad guys, which is
Oh, dude, the bad guys. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Who's going next? Me?
Go ahead.
All right. My pick of the week is the 2012 British film The Faculty from 2012, like I said before. This film, I think it was directed by the guy who did Monsters, I'm pretty sure. It's something associated with the Monsters. I don't know if it was produced by the same people who did Monsters.
Is it called The Faculty or The Facility?
The Facility, sorry.
I actually think Monsters 2 is happening. I think that might have been the news that I missed, just throwing it out there.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, this movie stars, there's a whole bunch of people in this film from, you know, films that we like Davey from Cockney vs. Zombies is in it, which I know Moods would be like, oh, that's fucking awesome. And Alex Reed from The Descent is in it, and the annoying fucker from The Citadel, the main guy from The Citadel's in it too. But the film basically takes place, it's basically about 8 subjects who volunteer in this hospital in the UK, and they're like, you know, like guinea pigs. They go through these they go there to, you know, take this pill and see what happens, and, you know, these doctors watch them. So they all go there and they start to take the medicine, and then of course, you know, shit starts to go wrong. And two of the guys who, you know, who volunteered, goes batshit crazy and starts you know, fucking shit up pretty hardcore. And then from then on, it's just like, you know, these 6 other people, you know, trying to solve the problem, but they know that you know, they're going to become fucked up too later on, because each person took the dose of the medicine an hour later than each other person. So like every hour, you know, the next person's going to go into this murderous rage and, you know, start fucking shit up. Now, there is I definitely did have a few problems with this film. The first problem is they never tell you what this medicine is or what it does. So, you know, we have 15 minutes moods or 18 minutes, but we never figure out what this medicine is or what it does and why these people are using it. You know, we never found out what it's meant to do, which I have a little bit of a problem. I don't know if, you know, that really contributed to the film at all, that we don't know why these people are taking this pill or what it's for. That was one problem I had with the film. That was the main issue I had with the film. And another issue is, you know, the characters were quite bland and non-interesting. And a film like this, which takes place in one place, I really think you have to have really interesting characters and really interesting actors to be able to pull a movie like this off. That's why I think films like, you know, like Frozen and Frozen and Exam and things like that work so well, because you have people who could, you know, who could actually act. Even Nine Dead, I mean, even though some of those actors were pretty fucking terrible, at least they were somewhat interesting, kept the narrative flowing a little bit. But some of these characters, you know, I really did not care about whatsoever. And I couldn't care if they die. You know, you have your typical old guy, your typical douchey fucking asshole, your typical hot chick, and all the generic characters that you see in a lot of films. So those are the two major problems. The characters wasn't a main of a problem as why these people were taking this medicine and what was the plan of it. At least with a film like Mold, I'm referring back to Mold again. You see why this mold is like is supposed to be killing these people, or what the government's planning to do with this mold. It's like, you know, think about that film, but them not telling you why this mold's doing what it did. That was the main issue I had with this film. It's a Tribeca film, and Tribeca really hasn't let me down yet, to be completely honest. Every Tribeca movie that I've watched is usually a pretty solid film. I really like this idea. I think that it was more well executed. I think it could be a really, really interesting film and a really interesting character study piece, because, you know, we see so many of these, you know, clinical studies go on, but we never really hear what goes on inside these clinical studies. And if shit actually does go wrong, you know, who knows, maybe shit does go wrong. Maybe not like this, but I give it a high recommendation, a little, not too high of a recommendation. I see if you can find it for cheap like I did, pick it up. It's definitely the best film I watched this week, which is interesting, just because I thought it was an interesting idea. So I give it like a 7 out of 10. If you guys could find it for cheap, I'd check it out. It's interesting. So yeah.
7 out of 10. Yeah, I mean, I thought that sounded pretty cool, so definitely worth the check out, I think.
Yeah. So, all right, Mr. Moods, you're up.
All right, man. Yeah, so for my pick of the week is a film from 1976. And, you know, it's from the awesome heyday of, you know, animal horror films and stuff. This is, you know, a brand new Blu-ray release from Scorpion Films. Fucking awesome company. So happy they released this shit, man. And it's called Dogs.
Nice.
This is a pick of the week.
Yeah. Why do you always sound so fucking every time I have, you're like, what the fuck?
Wait, when? I do this all the time?
Every time my pick of the week, you're like, ah, oh, I remember Manborg. You're like, Manborg?
That movie's fucking awesome.
No, dude. It's just because I've actually seen Dogs, and I remember not really liking it too much.
Oh, well, that sucks for you then, man.
Yeah,
that
you didn't, and you didn't like Torture Chamber either, so.
Well, that sucks you didn't like Dogs, because I thought it was fantastic. But the thing is, I watched so many damn movies this week, I was having a hard time picking what my, there was a lot of films I really liked, but yeah, Dogs is a very, very simple story, man. Basically, what's happening in this small town, all these dogs are kind of conforming together, and... you know, fucking kind of running the streets and shit like
that. Isn't it set on like college campus or something in this town?
Yeah, it's set. Well, that's what it kind of relates back to. You don't really know at first exactly why everything kind of relates back to the university. But so basically you have all these dogs that are kind of conforming together and they start kind of tearing up the night, literally, you know, attacking people. And it goes back to this university and there's kind of like this, there might be this, like, you know, kind of undercover, you know, government secret experiments that are happening, like, in these universities and stuff. And so now it's up to this local scientist and this guy that works at the university and stuff to kind of figure out what's going on with these dogs. If this is actually going on and this is what's causing these dogs to go fucking apeshit and, you know, start attacking people and shit like that. So the story is very, very kind of primitive, but it's entertaining as shit, though, man. I really did like I can't remember the guy's name in the film. The dude with that, like, very typical 70s kind of mushroom-cut haircut.
Yeah, I know, right? I remember that this film feeling very 70s. Like, the whole film.
Oh, dude, this movie screams 70s, man. But the one thing I really liked about this film is that all the dog attacks and how it was filmed. Like, some of these dogs are, like, viciously attacking fucking stuntmen and shit. And it's fucking cool, man. I love old films for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really well done. Like, it really looks vicious, man. It looks like these dogs are giving her. Like, just fucking giving her. The gore was actually pretty good in this, too. And I don't know, man. It was just an all-around fun film, and I had no issues with it. I thought maybe the end was kind of a little drawn out and a little kind of ridiculous and stuff. But, you know... It's just really refreshing to see a film like this, especially from the, you know, the 70s. There's so many films like this, you know, these kind of animal horror films and stuff. But I don't know, man, this one really did kind of work for me.
Wait, you know how normally you can tell which killer animal movie is the good one? It's usually the one that got there first, meaning its title is just dogs or alligator or crocodile. Like, you know what I mean? Because they get there first, so they get to use that title.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's usually the good one. But no, I mean, it's been a while. I did this on the very first day of my first October 31 series, the 31 horror films in 31 days. So it's been like 2 years since I've seen this.
How if you don't mind me asking, how did you watch the movie?
The DVD.
There was actually a DVD release.
Yeah, I have the DVD release.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah, I paid $3 for it on Walmart.com like years ago. Nice. So yeah, you know, I remembered, you know, you talking about it makes me want to revisit it because it could have been one of those cases where I would appreciate it much more now after these few years have passed. But I remember thinking like maybe it's been so long, but maybe it had something to do with like the characters or like the characters made bad decisions or were stupid or something. I can't really remember back to it, but I'm definitely curious to revisit it since. That's why I was so surprised. I was like, wait, I didn't like that movie too much, and it's your pick of the week. So I was kind of like, what?
Well, I mean, there is parts in this film where are kind of unbelievable. Like, there's a scene towards the end of the film where, you know, the mushroom head, you know, 70s looking dude and the girlfriend, I can't remember his fucking name. But anyways, they get trapped in her garage. And, like, these dogs are fucking attacking from all angles and stuff. And they're
doesn't a dog, like, bust through the wall or something?
Oh, yeah. And there's one scene where the dog actually busts through the wall and shit. But it's just, like, so funny to me because, you know, what had happened was, okay, this is why they get trapped in the garage. Because they get in there to go to escape, and then they realize that they don't have the keys. You know, and so Buddy decides he's going to fucking, you know, jumpstart this thing, and he can't do it and stuff. And I'm like, and then the dogs start busting through the walls and shit like that, but...
Yeah.
You know, at one point in the film, they actually, you know, they're like kind of trapped in the car and shit. I'm like, holy shit, you know. But, you know, I mean, obviously, yeah, there's some interesting decisions and stuff made in this film. But overall, I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was pretty, like, the whole end of the film where the dogs, like,
just massacre this place, dude. Like, they just fucking give her on this place. And, like, you know, they don't really show a whole lot, but they show a lot of carnage after, which just completely cracked me up. I was like, these fucking dogs just massacred this fucking place. And all these people couldn't escape. There was, like, eight dogs. And they killed like 40 people. And
yeah,
it was like,
I think I remember. Yeah, it's starting, some of it's starting to come back to me. But it's so weird, like how you can forget completely about a movie in like 2 years.
Does the addition you have like the Rottweiler with the red eyes?
I think so.
Oh man, that movie's like selling for like $50.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, this is the Scorpion.
Yeah, I think I seen like Zach or somebody post a photo of that. I was like, really? That got a Blu-ray release? It surprised the hell out of me because I never have heard anybody else talk about it except for me at that time. So I was like, I didn't even think it was like a film that anybody cared for. I remember, I think I gave it like a 2.5 out of 5 or something. I rated fives. But, you know, it could have been like totally, it could be a totally different rating now.
So that's kind of equal to like a 5 out of 10 then?
Yeah, like average.
Okay, so yeah, if I had to rate it, I'd give it a solid 7. You know, it's nothing spectacular, but like I'm a really big fan of 70s killer animal films. Like I think there's so many that are really good. You know, like, and I love the fact that like when these dogs are attacking, you're going, "Fuck, man, brutal."
Yeah,
like,
all it's practicals. So brutal. Obviously,
yeah, man,
you know.
It's so vicious, and I would love to see like exactly how they did those scenes and stuff. Like, it's just like some of the dogs don't even look that vicious, but they're just really giving her. And it's fucking insane. And I don't know. I had a lot of fun with it. And I got to say the transfer on this Blu-ray by Scorpion is fantastic. It looks really good for, an older 70s film. It doesn't look bad at all on Blu-ray. It looks really good.
I want to say that DVD I have might've been kind of rough.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I would highly advise, like, I mean, these are a little overpriced, but, the transfer was really good. Really well done. So.
Interesting pick, dude. I'm definitely want to revisit that one because, you know, some people say like, once you rate something, you could like, you know, you should stick with that rating, but not me, man. My opinions change on films all the time.
You know, it's actually funny. My pick of the week was going to be The Offspring. Isn't that ironic?
Yep.
Yeah, I think I didn't like that one.
That's so funny. You liked The Woman, but you didn't like The Offspring. Moods hated The Woman, but he liked The Offspring.
I honestly, man, you know, just getting into for 1 second, but I really like the fact that, you know, just showing where she comes from. I really enjoyed that. And like,
well,
I mean,
The Offspring was made first.
Yeah, and it's like just seeing that. And seeing that whole angle and stuff. And
did it make you like The Woman anymore?
Yes. Somebody asked me that the other day, and I said a little bit. You know, at least I understand her character a lot more now. And not a whole lot, though. I hate the fucking... I know I'm supposed to hate the fucking... the dad, all his characters, but I despise it so much that I just can't get into it.
We can't get into The Woman again, dude. We gotta move on.
But I just wanted to bring that up, that I was gonna pick The Offspring. But I thought it was good.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, I'll check out Dogs once again eventually. Report back on that. I believe that is it for the pick of the week, huh?
Yep.
Picks of the week.
It's finally time for the main event of the show. Your guys' picks that you wanted us to talk about. So we got 3 picks here. Got David Arquette's The Tripper, then we got Pieces, and then we got The Fog, the original Fog. So let's start with The Tripper, directed by David Arquette, starring JP's favorite person, Paul Rubens, a.k.a. Pee Wee Herman, who likes to say fuck a lot.
I don't know if he was starring.
Okay, he was
per
in.
Per se.
He was in the film, and he's fucking hilarious.
But you know
he really is.
Also
funny.
Is in the film, Jason Mewes.
Yes, Jason Mewes.
Which, I don't
before,
know about you
before
guys.
Before he got sober, this was before he
but,
got sober.
Out of all the people doing drugs, didn't it look like Jay was like the only one who actually knew what he was talking about?
Well, I think Jay was was the only one actually doing.
Yeah,
drugs.
Yeah, he was actually just like, he's like, dude, I'll just bring my own shit and do it for real.
That's before he got sober.
Yeah.
Totally.
All right. Who wants to tell the plot?
Well, you can go ahead.
It's your pick.
All right. So this is a David Arquette's first,
which super surprised me that he directed this. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. This is like a, I think this is only film. Has he directed anything else?
Nothing. No, I think I this is his only film.
Now, wasn't David Arquette like on like a celebrity rehab or something? Like, wasn't he into some shit? I want to say he battled. He had some sort of substance abuse problem.
Really?
I think he did actually. You know, wasn't he going through some crazy shit after him and Courtney kind of fucking?
Maybe I'm wrong. Might be thinking something else.
No, I think he did actually.
All right. So the film basically starts off in the 1980s. We see this father and like what was he like a lumberjack, right?
Yeah.
The father? Yeah.
Yeah. And he gets killed with a chainsaw. No. See, I'm fucking messing up the story. See, this is why this is
I could give you a IMDb description if you'd like.
Okay. The boy kills the fucking one of the guys with the chainsaw. Film flashes forward and we see our main character Samantha, who is, you know, fucked up because I guess her father or her...
A bunch of hippie-esque kids.
Fuck you. I'm almost done. I got this. Leave me alone. I will form a plot together in my mind. Okay. So our main character, Samantha, is traumatized by her abusive boyfriend. They all go in a van, a whole bunch of potheads, and they go to a modern-day Woodstock. And when they get there, they started getting knocked off by the guy who was in the beginning with the chainsaw.
Well,
is that it, right? And he's wearing a
Ronald Reagan. You don't have to spoil the ending.
And he's wearing a Ronald Reagan max, and he goes around and he slashes off these people.
You just told him the killer, dude.
Yeah, Ronald Reagan's the killer. Because it's totally not on the fucking cover of the
film. No, you told him the actual killer.
Oh. Well, whatever. I think it's kind of obvious.
I mean, I wasn't 100% sure. That's where my money was going, but I thought they might have did something to like counter that, the obvious one. Anyway, The Tripper.
I fucking love this movie. I think it's such a good slasher film. It's so fun. It doesn't take itself seriously.
I think it's an interesting, you know, political satire, really.
Yeah,
it's obviously
like filled with social commentary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so much social commentary. And I think it's a lot smarter than people give it credit for, to be honest. It's a little goofy, but I think what throws people off a lot, because I remember when this movie first came out, and they're like, oh, David Arquette directed a horror film. Since he can play a fucking retard in Dewey and Scream films, he can direct fucking films. I'm like, what?
And be a badass and fucking ravenous. It's like, come on.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, well, that has nothing to do with anything. I mean, if he can direct a film, he can direct a film. So I went in with an open mind on this one. I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it's fun.
You know, it's funny that you like this, Jeremy. I like it a lot,
actually. It seems like I like a lot of slasher films that people dress up in past presidents. Like, I loved President's Day, and I love this movie.
But you also don't like drugs in horror films too much, correct?
No, I don't like people who are addicted to drugs, and these people just smoke weed a lot, and that seems, you know, that happens a lot.
They're freaking candy flipping with acid and ecstasy.
One point in the film where the one guy says, you know, he's like, oh man, you know, like, we got a lot of, they're talking about all their drugs and shit, and he's like, yeah, but we're professional drug takers. So these guys are like proud of doing, like, when they're showing the sheets
acid. But they're not like, oh, I'm so depressed because I'm a drug addict. I'm going to, you know, go shoot myself.
That's just because they're not taking a realistic look at it. This is a party fun movie, man. It's not taking a realistic look at it. Mm-hmm.
It's not because, I mean, like, you know, the political satire in it, you got this whole hippie aspect, you know, they're rolling around in the Scooby-Doo van is what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know,
and you got Paul Rubens and like an American flag, you know, fucking...
And honestly, there's so many fucking funny lines in this movie, man. I pissed myself in one line in this film watching it again. When the girl, or is it the girl, says George Bush is the greatest American president ever.
Yeah.
I fucking laughed so hard because, I mean, it's a joke in itself, right? Mm-hmm. And Oh man, dude, that made me laugh so hard. But I don't know, man. I think it's a pretty fun film. I think it's got some pretty interesting characters, actually. To be honest, and I'm not just saying this because I'm a big Paul Reubens fan, but I think he's actually really fucking good in the film. The scene where he's talking to the sheriff on the phone and he keeps saying, go fuck yourself. And then he like purposely, or he's like, fuck off, right? And then he purposely doesn't cover the phone. He's like, what'd you say? And he's like, oh, I was just talking to somebody in the other room.
Yeah.
Is that shit not fucking hilarious? But the way he's doing it, he's just, I don't know, man. The whole time I'm watching Paul Reubens in this movie, man, I kept thinking to myself that his mustache was very reminiscent of a Hitler mustache. But I think it's just the way it's grown on his face. I don't think it was supposed to be. I kept thinking that. I don't know why.
I got to say, I was a little bummed there wasn't more Jason Mewes, because honestly, that was probably my favorite character.
Really? You didn't like Pee-wee?
No, that was probably my second favorite character.
Wow. You hear that, everybody out there in the 20th
century? I never said I didn't like Paul Reubens. I just said I didn't like Pee-wee. Yeah.
But Paul Reubens is Pee-wee. This is like
Near Pee-wee in this film. Dude. He was a completely different character. He has a little range.
He was in this movie and he was in Duncan, the movie with the ape in the hotel.
He was in Blow also, which he's and good Blow. In Blow.
Yeah.
And this kind of reminded me of Blow.
There was one scene in this film that really kind of got on my nerves a little bit, just very minor, and it was the scene where Buddy was like, you know, he grabs a beer and then the other dude goes, hey man, you know, take her easy with the beer, you know, we gotta conserve that stuff. And I'm like, okay, you guys are going to a fucking Woodstock. You guys are totally prepared with all these drugs, but you guys brought like two six packs of beer.
Yeah, they had like one 6-pack, dude.
I was like, are you fucking serious, man?
Maybe Jason Mewes drank it all on the way to the set, so they're like, shit, we have to compromise.
Yeah, but yeah,
when he's so mad.
How about that redheaded dude walking around naked? I thought that shit was pretty funny.
With the chick? Hey, little rabbit. He's not going to hurt you.
Hey, little rabbit. Come here. Like, he has such a soft voice. It's like total wimpy, dude. Total wimpy.
Totally, man.
Yeah. Honestly, it seems like you actually liked this movie. I didn't think you were going to like it.
Oh, yeah, I liked it. It was a lot of fun.
I like the I really like that the setting, man. Like when a lot of the kills are happening.
A lot of the set pieces are really neat. Like
yeah, it's
falling down
really
trees and the little like streams and shit. I like the setting.
Yeah,
and
man,
honestly, really like the that. I thought they did a good job. Like when they're doing the nitrous, because they do a lot of different drugs in this. When they do the nitrous, you start hearing the woo 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 woo. That's nitrous, and like I thought they did a lot of the drug scenes pretty solid, because that's hard to do in films. It's hard to really appropriately like convey what drug does to you on
screen. I think they did it perfectly though, because they didn't overdo it in those scenes.
That's
either.
What most people do. Like you look at stuff like shrooms, and that was one of my complaints in the film Shrooms, is it just wasn't real.
Yeah, I mean, you get the point after a couple seconds of what's going on, and you're like, yeah, cool.
Yeah,
you know, and that's all it needs to be.
And I like probably one of my favorite angles was the dude, the like pussy like boyfriend who's like, yeah, man, I'm just gonna smoke a little weed, maybe you know, drink a couple beers, and I'm gonna stay with my mind clear so I could be here with you. And then he's like just sitting there trying to act like not fucked up once he started taking a bunch of acid. I love that. It was so funny to me how he's just like standing there like trying to act not fucked up, because it's so funny when you see somebody try to act normal when they're high.
Okay, so another aspect of the film that I really thought was cool, and actually me and Jeremy can totally relate to this, because when I was visiting him, we went to Wisconsin, we went to the Jelly Belly factory, and we actually heard this fucking story that they talk about in the film about how President Reagan was.
Yeah.
That's a pretty smart thing, though. I like that.
Yeah, this whole Jelly Belly theory, which is actually a true story. And the thing is, I thought it was a really cool scene, because we had just actually learned about, you know, how Reagan had this whole Jelly Belly theory, and what they say in the film is completely 100% what his theory was.
I was like, well, that's repeat it so they know what the hell we're talking about if they've never seen it.
The theory is basically, you know, people that kind of how does it go again? Okay,
Ronald Reagan would put a bowl of jelly beans in his office, and he would learn about people by what they grabbed. Would they grab a handful, or would they tactically go and grab a certain color?
Certain flavor.
Which is totally legit. That is a real thing.
Yeah, I thought that was super fucking cool how they put that in there. That was great. So what do you guys think of the gore effects in that film? I thought it was pretty well done. There was one scene that was so interesting because when the killer fucking reaches in and just grabs like a big wad of guts and just kind of pulls them off to the side.
Black chick sitting behind the tree and she's watching him. And I actually, that was probably, it actually kind of grossed me out. Like, it was like, ugh.
Why did he do that? He just like reaches in.
He just rips the guts out.
Why not, like, man?
I guess. I just kind of questioned it at first, but you know. Another aspect of the film that I thought was really interesting is how many conflicts were in that film. You know, you got like
Paul Reubens conflict, and then you got like,
well, yeah, you got like Paul Reubens with the fucking, you know, the sheriff department, and then you got the rednecks versus the fucking hippies, and then you got like everyone's kind of getting all fucked up in this film, and I'm like, really kind of cool. It was really well done. You know, it doesn't over convolute everything in the film. I thought it was kind of, David Arquette did a good job. Speaking of Arquette, he plays that redneck fucker that gets his arm broken in the film.
Yeah, that was,
It was fucking nasty, but he was such a dick. But I have
that to was say, a perfect role for him because it wasn't like big and in front, like, haha, look at me, I'm directing and starring.
But I love the fucking part in the film. Makes me laugh every time I watch it when they're fucking all in like commando gear and shit and they're going to hunt down the hippies. And then he starts shooting Jason Mewes, like, I'm fucking bleeding, I'm bleeding. And he's like, wait a minute, they're shooting.
He's like, I've been shot.
I fucking love that scene, man. It's so funny.
No, so good. I think this is like a good example of a film that is, knowing exactly what it is, it's for the subject matter that you're dealing with, there's no way you could have took this serious.
Okay, one thing I did notice in the film that, you know, we're talking about all the good things. One thing that actually kind of, I wanted to see a little bit more, and I know it didn't need to be that focused, but I wanted to see a little more maybe kind of concert stuff. I think the band that was playing in the film was, is it Fishbone that was playing? Is that the name of the band?
I have no idea.
I think Fishbone, like, they're actually like a real band or something like that. But I just wanted to see more concert stuff. And that was kind of my only, you know, major, major problem with the film.
The layout of the place seemed a little weird too. Like, it didn't seem like a big open, like where the main like part was, like the main like concert and like events and all that. It seemed like it was just like in a small little area. It wasn't like wide open. It was kind of weird. Like, it didn't seem like how a real festival would be. But I mean, that's like the smallest of complaints. But
I really
noticing that.
I agree. I don't really know what else to say about the film. I mean, to be honest.
It's just a fun movie. Like, it's just it's like not amazing in terms of like storytelling, but it does what it's there to do, and it entertains the whole way through. I enjoyed it. It was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Jeremy, what do you rate it?
7.5 out of 10. Definitely a lot of fun. I like it a lot. That's why I picked it, obviously.
Modes?
Yeah, I rate it a 7 out of 10.
I gave it a 7 out of 10 also.
Interesting.
Nice.
So our average would be like a 7.25 or something.
Yeah, 7.25.
That seems appropriate.
All right, so next film that we're going to be talking about is Pieces. JP, this is yours, so you can talk about it. Tell the plot.
Jeez, I don't know about this one.
Yeah,
the plot is very simple.
That's what I thought, bitch. Make fun of me.
The plot for Pieces is very simple. We have it's kind of like a detective story. We have a killer with chainsaws that is hacking up campus students, and there is some backstory on who the killer is, like at the beginning, and it involves a mean mommy who disciplines her child, and he takes revenge. So it is literally
using a nudie puzzle.
Yeah, which I've never even seen one of those. I did not know there was nudie puzzles. I mean, I'm sure there is. There's nudie cards and everything else, but I'd never seen one in ever, like not even in a movie. So yeah, it's a very, very simple story. It is a like slasher. This should have been called like Chainsaw Massacre. Like like this should have had that title.
It's funny, a lot of people actually consider this film to be giallo because there's such a you know, detective story to it and stuff, and hence the killer with the gloves and stuff.
Would you lump it in there?
I generally don't. I never really thought of it as like a true giallo film. You know, I think of it more as a slasher film.
The whole time I was watching, that's what I felt, though. Like, I was like, this reminds me of, like, a giallo. Like, what I would think is a giallo. Because I've never really...
Yeah, like, it has the elements. It has the elements, but it has a lot of elements of being a slasher. I mean, you can go either way on this one. I mean, when people classify it as a giallo, I don't say anything. You know, it's like, cool. You know, it totally has all those aspects. Like you said, very simple story. You know, mother catches fucking little boy putting a nudie puzzle together and she freaks the fuck out. And
little
he
boy
fucking
snaps, kills mother, flash
with
forward
a chainsaw.
Appropriate amount of years, kids
40.
Get picked off.
40, 40 years.
Shit. Did they actually say that? I must have missed it.
Yeah, 1942, the backstory happens in, and the movie takes place in present day, which is 1982, hence your 40 years. And basically what it is, it's like, you know, it takes place on this college campus. And fucking people are getting picked off.
And there is a detective trying to figure out who is the killer. And that's literally a story. There's no need to even explain anymore because that is the story.
No, and I will say that the detective is played by Christopher George, which is, you know, his ultimate character, really. He plays a detective in many, many fucking movies. He's awesome. I love Christopher George with a passion. Rest in peace. But yeah, he does just his normal job, man. It's great.
Yeah, this film to me, I would not say that there's much in terms of, you know, much like The Tripper kind of, there's not a whole lot of story. There's nothing that's gonna, you know, break new ground or even anything like that. But what it lacks in story, it makes up for in total carnage and just awesome, awesome kills. This film has great kills. That is what this film is all about.
This movie is all about the carnage and kills, man. Like, dude, just the idea of being hacked up with a chainsaw and like all these random settings of the killings too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like, and he does it so many places. I think that's so fucking insane, dude.
I just like it fun. Like, he's like making the jigsaw puzzle from like the people's body parts.
Well, that's one thing though. That's one thing that I noticed about the film is what he's doing. After he kills, he puts more pieces in the puzzle, right? Because he's kind of building.
They're
that.
Trying to create some kind of common thing there, some kind of story device. Does it really work? Maybe, maybe not. It doesn't.
Right in the final, like almost in the final scene when, you know, something comes out of the closet. I'm not going to give it away, but I mean, that's kind of what it's building up to.
Yeah.
But you can obviously, I mean, you can pretty much predict that. I mean, it's not like it's, you know.
Yeah. You know, Pieces is a very appropriate title for this film. Not only is it the puzzle, but like just pieces of the bodies and, you know, hacking people to pieces. man, dude, I was really like into this one in terms of like kills. Like it was just everything they was doing. I was like, I was all with it. I was like, you know, the waterbed where it's like kind of, it's filmed really cool.
Man,
actually,
I would love to hear your
it
opinion.
It slows down and it's like, man, you see the blood and the water splash up in the air.
It's
in
actually
slow motion. That is cool shit, man.
It's actually my favorite kill in the movie, man, is the waterbed scene. Yeah, I love when it slows down and he kind of misses her and he pokes the waterbed.
Yeah.
And then from there on, it's just like, it looks like a fucking blood.
That's
so
a
much
top
blood
10 all time worthy kill.
Oh man, you have to watch Gutter Balls then.
And then really? When he
Mood
when,
Snow's my number, my favorite kill from Gutter Balls.
Oh yeah. That movie has some of the best kills for sure. But yeah, like the end part of that kill is fantastic. Like, it just looks so brutal the way he does it, man. I'm not going to give
this it. Was what a Spanish film?
Yeah,
Spanish. It is a Spanish film.
It's
yeah.
dubbed, so it's, correct?
It's
it's done with American actors, but they've dubbed in their voices after. That's why the ADR is off a little bit, right? So it's all done with American actors.
There was one scene that I felt like very weak. Like it felt, I don't know what word I'm looking for, but it just felt off. And it's when he's stalking a girl and it has like the band music playing. And I'm just like, this feels like so weird.
Yeah, because they're trying to figure out if someone put that shit on as like a, I don't know. I don't know how to say it though. Is that like the scene in the change room? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that's the one. And then she takes off after she gets half dressed.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah. That just like it's like the school music playing, and I'm like,
yeah,
it
yeah.
just feels so weird. Like it feels wrong. Like it shouldn't be scored like that, but it was. It was part of the movie, you know. Like, I'm not saying it's a negative. It just was, it feels bizarre because you never see, like, that type of music in a stalking scene.
Oh, totally, totally. Because that music was actually playing in, like, the real life.
Yeah, like, it's film, in, right? In the movie. Like, as yeah.
part it's of the narrative. It's abstinent sound.
Yeah, because they actually, they even talk
they actually
about
hear, it. Like, it's like, oh, I wonder why my professor didn't use that. That's like a really good example. I gotta like tell him about that. Between non-diegetic and diegetic sound, like yeah, non-diegetic is things that you hear but the characters can't hear, and diegetic is stuff that the characters. Like, have you seen "I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker"?
Yeah.
Like when they're walking down the street with the band playing behind them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and that's the thing, because they even acknowledge the fact. They're like, man. Like, why is this fucking shit playing? Like, hey, yeah, can you go check to see if the dean's, you know, testing out the music system right now and stuff like that?
So, yeah, and it made sense why it was playing. But it almost gives you this rare look at something that totally doesn't fit in terms, you know, of a normal, like, scored stock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that actually brings me to another point that I had here was the actual score of the film I thought was used incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I thought the score was awesome throughout the whole film. I thought it was totally perfect for the tone of the film. It wasn't overdone. It just kind of it melds in perfectly. I thought it was awesome, and that kind of brings me into like when they did a lot of shots at nighttime in the film. I thought they were really well done.
Yeah.
Dark, really dark, but really well done in that aspect. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I loved. You know, that's something that we got away from in modern horror is the dark scenes are no longer dark. Like they're not, they actually don't have like true darkness.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean some great like hacked off arms with chainsaws and shit. Dude. Awesome. Just so much carnage. It really is just all about the carnage.
There's one character that we haven't brought up in this film and that's Willard. He's the grounds guy. Is he not the funniest character when he's not even trying to be funny? I mean, dude, he talks all the time with like one open eye. Like he's always kind of like, like what the hell's that about? Like that eye isn't lazy, but he just, the way he's always talking and looking at you, he always has this like eye kind of closed. It's fucking hilarious, man. I thought it was so funny.
Yeah.
I thought he was just a funny character, but there's one part in this film, dude, that completely, I was busting a fucking gut, man. When the Bruce Lee character comes out of nowhere and starts doing some crazy kung fu shit. Do you guys remember that part?
Yeah.
Like, it's so random. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's my kung fu professor. And I'm like, what the fuck? Yeah. Are you serious?
Yeah. You know what I like, thought of? I thought of Cabin Fever with the Pancakes Kid.
Okay. That's so funny.
Yeah, so he's funny. And then she's like, "Oh, let me just find my gun."
yeah, totally. Like there's a couple what the fuck moments in this film, and like the other part with the other young kid that the Christopher George's character was interviewing through the film, or not interviewing but kind of keeping an eye on. He was like the other, you know, dorky kid or whatever. Yeah. You know, the fuck is his friend's name? The guy with the dark hair. But anyways, he's like at this apartment building talking to, you know, the tennis player or whatever, and kind of starting like this really weird relationship. Like he's like the student and she's like the older tennis teacher and stuff.
But then he turns around as he's leaving his fucking her apartment, and then he fucking he jumps out at him and says Casanova with this weird ass mask. Is that not one of the weirdest parts you've ever seen in a film?
But it's like, funny though.
It is funny, but when you think about it, it is so random.
Mm-hmm. You know, I always so wonder random. If some of that stuff gets like changed or like slightly altered in dubbing, and it causes it to be like, what the fuck?
But the thing is, though, that dorky character who did that whole scene, he had no business being there in the first place.
Yeah.
That's the weird part about the whole scene, and that's why it's so kind of random. Like, not even kind of random. It is completely random. Like, I think it's so funny, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Pieces is it's definitely
it's a great. Yeah, it's a fucking. I think it's a great film. I think it's a lot of fun, but I think, to be honest, man, I think the ending of the film is a little anticlimactic. That's just my opinion. Just the way, like, when the killer gets revealed, I think that it's like, oh, like just the way it was done. You know, I don't think it was anything special. I was like. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, but you know, it's cool to reveal the killer. At the same time, it wasn't done in a very shocking way. You're like, oh,
is this okay. guy? Is the guy who directed this movie directed Slugs too? Right?
Did he really?
I don't think so. Did he?
J.P. Simon and Juan Simon are the same person. So yes, they directed the same movie. Hmm. Slugs and Pieces are directed by the same person.
Oh, nice.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Slugs is awesome.
Do you see a resemblance between the two movies? Like, style-wise?
Maybe a little bit.
I haven't seen Slugs, so I don't know.
Slugs is awesome.
I'm just curious.
So, yeah,
they are completely different, but...
This mm-hmm. film is totally... If you're looking for, like, a good, flowing, strong story, this is not the film to look to. If you're looking for a good, you know, solid detective story, good acting, good characters, any of that, you're looking in the wrong place, but... It definitely is a lot of fun, and that's, I think, what matters most with a film like this. It's a lot of fun kills, a lot of, like Moon said, like, what the fuck moments. You know, actually filmed pretty damn well. Some, you know, great kill sequences, and I don't mean the actual kill. I mean, like, the stock, the actual art of the killing, the way that it's filmed. All of that stuff is very, very top-notch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just realized that Joe D'Amato had a part in this film as a writer. That's fucking insane. Yeah, really bloody. Really fucking bloody. I like how they did this film. It was good.
It's pretty much all I have to say about Pieces.
Yeah. So yeah. Ratings, guys?
I actually gave Pieces a 7.5 out of 10.
Exactly what I gave it, 7.5 out of 10.
It's so funny how much we disagree on films, JP, but then when it comes down to something that we do like, we give it the same rating. I gave it 7.5 too. It's exactly what I gave it. Very interesting.
All right, so the final film of this marathon show is John Carpenter's The Fog.
Jonathan Carpenter.
Jonathan Carpenter, not Wesley Craven. All right, Moods, you want to tell the story on this one?
Oh, how do I even want to start telling the story of this one? Should we start? I guess basically you could just tell, like, the opening scene is the story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just gonna read it right off here.
Yeah, do it.
Well, maybe I will, because, yeah.
Then we could just fill in the gaps as we go.
Okay.
The sedentary of a small sea town of Antonio Bay, California, is approaching the centennial. God damn it, I can't fucking talk.
Centennial?
The 100-year anniversary.
Centennial.
Right, yes.
I don't know if you have those up there in Canada, or you're just like...
Yeah.
Centennial. You say it all Frenchy.
Fine, maybe, I don't know.
Because you're Quebecian.
100 years ago, the wealthy leper Blake bought the clipper ship Elizabeth Dane and sailed with his people to form a leper colony. However, the sailing through the thick fog, they were deliberately misguided by a campfire onshore, steering the course of the ship towards the light and crashing her against the rocks. While the
townsfolk prepare to celebrate the victims of this heinous crime that the town's founding fathers committed rise from the sea to claim retribution. Under cover of the fog, they carry out their vicious attacks, searching for what is rightly theirs. And that's actually a really great description for the film.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I'm just going to state off right off the bat, I think the opening scene in the fog is one of my favorite opening scenes ever in a film.
Really?
I absolutely love the fucking story that is told. I think it's so believable. The atmosphere is amazing. And the story is so basic and so damn cool. It's your very typical kind of perfect story that you could tell to, like, you know, 7-8-year-old kids that are sitting there listening to the story. Mm-hmm. I think it's fantastic, and it really, really does fucking work, and it sets the whole tone for the film.
One of the things thoughts? That I'll say right off the bat, one of the things I like about the fog is, well, there's two main things that I think really help this film. One is the locations. All the different locations that we hop around to in, I forget the town's name, but we travel to different places. And that kind of relates to the other thing, is there's a lot of things happening. It feels like there's a lot of stories going on, a lot of different characters we're flashing to, and Spivey. Each of those characters, what's up?
Spivey Point.
Well, that's the like lighthouse area, I think. But isn't the actually... town. The town's like Santa something or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I really like how we're following the Stevie whatever, the radio DJ.
Stevie Wayne. Then
Stevie Wayne, which reminded me of a girl named Stevie Hill that I went to school with who wasn't very pretty, but now she's a stripper. I guess she got pretty. And I just found this out the other day.
Just because she's a stripper, she has to be pretty? Aren't there ugly strippers?
Yeah, but I mean, no, there are. Trust me. But anyway.
JP knows from experience.
I've been to a strip club one time. It's a hell of a story. I'll have to tell it to you guys sometime.
Okay.
It involves a police chase.
Ooh.
So yeah, anyway.
Can I see it on Cops?
No.
Damn it.
Because on Cops, they never get away.
Yeah. Oh, you got away.
So, you know, I like the location, man. These locations are top, and man, Carpenter does that all the time in his films. Got some great Dean Cundey cinematography. It really is one of the most beautiful films I've seen. Especially on Blu-ray. Oh my god, I love the locations of this film. The coastlines, the lighthouse, the, you know, even the interior stuff like the store. Mm-hmm. And the church with the fog coming in and the lighting. It's all great.
Mm-hmm. That was one thing I always loved about this film is how the fog looks.
I don't know how long it took them to, like, fucking do all that lighting. Like, yeah, lighting is such a pain. That's, like, probably the hardest thing of film is getting the lighting right and the sound. But, like, lighting, I cannot imagine how long that fucking took to do to get it to look like that.
Especially when you're dealing with a bunch of fog.
Yeah.
Where everything has to be just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So well done.
Yeah.
So well done in that film. I especially love the scene where basically the last scene in the film where the priest is in the church and then the fog starts coming through the bottom of the door. It just fucking just, oh man, it's so thick and like quick and I love that, man.
Doesn't it feel like there's a lot going on though?
You have Janet Leigh's character, which is, you know,
with Annie Brackett.
Yep.
You know, she's fucking, you know, coordinating this 100-year anniversary party and stuff like that. So you got that thing going on.
And then you have the priest who's like found the dirty secret of the town. Then you have Tommy mother effing Atkins without a mustache, you know.
Yeah,
sleeping with Jamie Lee, like, and he. What's funny?
He's investigating the seagrass that's went missing.
Yeah, did you notice when he picks her up, they're listening to the radio and she's like, it's 12:15 or something, you know, join me till 1 a.m. or 1 a.m. And then when it flashes to them after they had sex, he got her in the car all the way home, nailed her, and it just turned 1 a.m.
Nice.
That is Tommy Atkins for you guys.
Tommy Atkins.
Yes.
Yeah. You and names.
But I think all the elements of this film are very well done, though. I think you need that pre-story.
Yeah, and that's not even all of it. You know, you have Stevie who's trying to get her, you know, little kid and stuff. And I love that radio angle where it feels like this little town. I love how this little town was created because it feels like everybody's so close with everybody's listening to the local radio station. And it just seems like there's radio. Everybody has the radio on it. It just feels like that's what they do. Like that's part of their living.
And I can totally 100% relate to that, doing radio for so long that her on the radio and that smooth ass voice and just cutting in and out. And oh, dude, it just, I can relate. I love it so much, man. It's so fucking cool, man. Every aspect of this film, I think, is perfectly executed. I think it's fantastic. I think one of the most interesting scenes in the film is when Jamie Lee's character is inside the morgue.
Uh huh.
And then you got that fucking, you know, the corpse that kind of gets up and kind of comes at her and shit. Isn't that just such a weird fucking scene? What are your guys' thoughts on that scene?
Jeremy?
Nobody has any thoughts on that?
Sorry, I'm spacing out. What scene?
It is like 3 a.m. and... And we've been here on the East Coast.
Yeah, it's 2 here. Not like Mr. Moods is fucking midnight.
Sorry, guys.
Okay, well I guess you guys could blame me for talking about Sean Cunningham for an hour.
What's the question? Sorry.
It's the scene where Jamie Lee is in the morgue,
mm-hmm.
and Tom Atkins is out talking to his buddy, who's the, you know, the coroner and stuff. And she's standing in there, and you know she's got her back turned, and all of a sudden this fucking. One of the bodies from the seagrass gets up and starts, walking towards her and just kind of collapses and shit. I always found that scene to be so fucking bizarre.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was shot. Like, I think that's like the main thing that we're talking about, like a lot in this film. It's the way it was shot. That sequence is an interesting shot sequence. Like, what do you find out of it?
I find it odd because it's like, it kind of, I don't know, man. I guess the mythology behind what's going on there, you know, are these fucking zombies? Are they ghosts?
Mm-hmm.
Both? Or, you know, what's going on? Like, that scene always kind of stood in my mind as,
there's
like...
Scooby-Doo villains.
Like, Scooby-Doo villains?
Yeah, I never...
Don't they kind of remind you of that, man? I never really
saw them as zombies, though. I always thought of them as ghosts.
But that's the thing. I think it's like a combination. Like, they're supposed to be... I don't know, like ghosts coming out of the fog and stuff, but mm-hmm. they are quite clearly in the physical though because of what they can do, right? Like a ghost generally can't grab somebody or grab something physical and decapitate you.
It depends. It kind of depends what world you're in. Like if you look at the entity, you can't see it, but it could grab you.
Yeah, and it could rape you.
But that's what I love about this film is that it's such a mystery of what exactly
are these things.
I mean, we obviously know it's a revenge story. It's basically what it is. Like they're back there to, you know, to claim something and get back at the people, blah blah blah. You know, we know this, but exactly what they are. And I love that mystery of the film. It's so beautifully executed, man. Every scene with the fog in the light towers. I love the scene where, you know, the guy, you know, the dude, I can't remember his name. I always forget his fucking name. The guy that always phones Adrian Barbeau's character. Stevie Wayne. And
yeah, I know who you're talking about. Dan maybe.
Yeah, and like that scene where he's just like, he's kind of being like, you know, nothing's going to fucking get me. You know, he's not even saying nothing's going to get me, but you know that something's going to happen right there.
Of course, anybody that says that, you know, it's going to happen.
Did you guys see John Carpenter's cameo at the beginning?
Yeah, Bennett. Yeah. I always remember the name Bennett, man. It's so funny.
Yeah. Bennett's like such a funny name. I always remember Bennett too, like Bennett Brauer when Chris Farley used to play him on Saturday Night Live. I always remember that name. It's such like a weird name.
But I don't know what else do you guys have? I mean, to me, I think this movie is almost perfect. Like I don't have anything that I can say bad about the film. Like I've watched this movie so many times, and I just
I want to ask JP something.
Yeah.
Do you find this film better than Christine? I know how much you like Christine, so that's why I'm asking.
I think maybe slightly better.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so JP, what are your thoughts on this one?
I picked
this film specifically to talk to you about it because I've seen it 100 times.
I've never seen it, yeah.
Every time I watch this movie, it gets better for me. I love it so much.
Well, let me tell you the things I didn't like about it, because it's not very many, but I did feel that the overall story, by the end of it, I did feel like it was a bit like anticlimactic. Like, I think that it could have been a little bit stronger at the end.
Really?
Yeah.
But they just wanted their fucking goddamn gold back, man.
I know, but it's just like...
It's like, I was watching, I was like, okay. Oh, look, it's Warwick Davis! Even though this is like, you know, 14 years before Leprechaun. 13 years.
I was just like, I don't know, I was expecting like more of a, like a fight or something. Like, I was expecting more of like a, like once they like but really showed up, like I was expecting them to just like tear shit up or something. I don't know.
But
movie have to be like that, though?
I think it works perfectly because it kind of keeps that settled tone going throughout the whole thing, right to the end. Like, it doesn't go up to this level. It doesn't go from like, you know, like an 8 to like a fucking 26. You know, it's like, it just kind of, I don't know why I use those numbers. That was weird. But
we get it.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't shoot the fuck up, and it kind of keeps that natural tone, and but you understand it, and I fucking love the tone of this film, man. I think it's just great.
Yeah, I just don't feel like that was, I don't know, man. I felt like it was building to something and it never really got there. Maybe I was just looking at it wrong. It just felt like there was this slow build that I was expecting to. I was kind of expecting it to kind of escalate because it's just it's a slow, steady build. Like, you kind of expect, like, just from, you know, previous experiences, you kind of expect for maybe a little bit more at the end. Also, I thought that it was like, it was a little too easy. It's like they wanted their gold back. Well, they still like fucking ruined their lives and like killed them all. Like, I mean, I kind of get it. The ghost can't rest until it gets what belongs to them or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
That kind of felt a bit like, I'm trying to think back though, because it feels like a bit overdone, but I don't know if it was at the time. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to think about, like, you know, have I seen a bunch of stuff like that beforehand?
But honestly, I think this might have something to do with you watching it for the first time, right?
Yeah, probably. That's what I'm saying.
If you watched this movie 15 years ago, I think you would have been like, oh, god damn it, man. That's pretty fucking cool.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I am aware of that. Like, I know that I'm trying to put – that's what I was saying. I was trying to put myself in there. Like, would it feel like that, you know, if I'd seen it, you know, years ago? And these aren't, like, big problems. These are just, like, my minor complaints. I think that overall, the only negative I actually do have is probably that it felt like it went, you know, flat the whole time. Like, it really didn't feel like it ever picked up. In terms of like,
but it's like, I don't know, steady climb.
I know, but
it's only like a couple degrees, man. It just kind of goes up by small degrees, you know. But it keeps that perfect tone and atmosphere throughout the whole film. Nothing gets silly. Nothing is out there, and like, it's just kind of, oh, that's what I love about it.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. I guess it would be different if I wasn't expecting it, you know. It's like, it kind of did really remind me of Scooby-Doo, the way like everything kind of just, you know, ends. But then also it has that stinger at the end where it's like, you know what I'm talking about? Like the very end, which almost feels like, to kind of go, like, it almost feels like manufactured, like, oh, we got to put a stinger in it. That didn't feel natural based on how it ended.
Well, I think, without giving too much away, I think the reason why that's thrown in there is because I think that, you know, the people, you know, or the zombie ghosts or whatever, I think they feel that they need to, for them to rest, I think they need to settle a score with that person.
Yeah.
I don't want to give away. But I think that since he is responsible for, you know, where, oh my God, I'm just beating around the church. I think that, you know, the way it goes down,
his descendant was directly the
exactly.
One to, okay. Yeah. I got you. But that's kind of the thing. Like, I was almost expecting like more of a revenge, because it is a revenge tale. And when you see revenge, it's usually carried out like hardcore, which would totally not fit if it was too hardcore. I'm with you on that.
It's just so about the characters and the atmosphere and stuff. And just kind of like, you really kind of, you feel for everybody in this, like even the smaller characters, like the dude in the lighthouse, man, like he doesn't have the biggest role in the film.
Everybody's, you know, likable. I do.
That's the thing. And like, and dude, his demise, man, you're like, oh, fuck, man. Like, you know, it kind of adds to it, though. Like, you know, you don't know him for that long, but he has this awesome rapport Stevie Wayne. And I like that, you know, I think John Carpenter captured that so great with those characters. You know, they don't need to be in the film that much, but when they are,
I'm totally with you on that. Maybe a couple more kills would have been cool. But these are just like little things. I mean, they're not really complaints at all. They're just, observations, like kind of, I'm very satisfied with the film. I wouldn't change much. I probably wouldn't change anything, actually. But I'm still curious, like, what if there was, like, this or that? Like, would it have hurt it or help it?
So what are your favorite scenes of the film? Like, one of my favorite scenes, actually, is when...
Honestly, my favorite scenes are scenes where there's, like, not much going on. Like, I love the scene where we see Stevie driving to the lighthouse, parking, and then walking down the ladder, just because how beautiful it looks.
Dude, isn't that fucking insane? Because I've thought about this a million times, because, you know, I'm like, could you imagine having to do that walk every day to and from?
Yeah.
Holy shit, yeah, man.
I was just like, it just looks so awesome. Like the coastline.
It's just a beautiful, beautiful California setting, man. I think
it's like the most best, like,
most best.
Shut up.
I'm sorry. I had to correct that. I'm sorry. It was just me busting your balls. I don't really give a fuck.
But no, but yeah, I mean,
it's a great set. It really is.
So many like awesome things, and to be honest, like those complaints that I had, they're really nothing. Like they're probably unwarranted, almost. Like
I think
it was just kind of more me just looking at it and saying like, well, what if this?
Yeah, I really like the whole thing with the witching hour, you know, like,
yeah,
you know,
I everyone love that, kind, dude.
Everyone like, kind of comes to the, you know, 12 o'clock happens and like everything kind of goes to shit, and then everyone kind of figures it out. They're like, what the fuck, man? Like everything kind of did go to shit at 12 o'clock, and then it kind of relates back to, you know, the whole backstory and stuff. I really like that, man. I think it's simple, but it's very effective.
Yeah, you know? It is. And that's one. This is a very like, it's not a simple film, but it kind of is. You know what I mean? There's a lot of things going on, and it's kind of very interwoven like perfectly to where there is a lot of stuff going on, but it's still very simple at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think you really get that simpleness to the town where like everybody, it's just normal for everybody to be listening to Stevie on their radio in their car or their one in their hotel room or their house or their, you know, grocery store. It's just a normal thing that they do. It's what they know. It's how they live. Everybody kind of has the same thing going on. I think that's like lost completely in a lot of films. You can't have that like small town, like tight-knit, like community where they all do the same things anymore.
I mean, we can sit here and talk about how well the cinematography was and you know, how well John Carpenter directed the film. And I think the writing is brilliant
and
too.
The blues. I love the blues.
Yeah. The colors and the lighting, everything about this film is really well done. But we can't forget about how fucking awesome the score is in this film.
Yeah. Yeah.
The score is used so perfectly and it's so fitting to the atmosphere, man. I think it's one of those scores that just, oh dude, every time I hear it, I just want to hear more, man. You know, I love it. I think it's so perfect.
These are the films where John is like at his absolute best.
Yeah, that's why I always said The Fog is up there for, you know, I think one of his best films all around. And I don't know, man, are you like, do you want to watch it again right away? Because even me talking about it, I just want to put it on. Like, I love this movie.
I wouldn't mind listening to like a commentary track.
Oh, it'd be interesting.
It does have one on the Scream Factory release with John Carpenter.
Yeah, I got to get into the special features of it. I've watched a couple, and I got to maybe check out a commentary. But
there's actually two commentaries.
Actually, yeah, you're right. There is two.
I will say that, honestly, it's what I was saying. You're actually right. And the more I think about it, it was the right choice was to keep it like that simple, steady pulse throughout. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, that's interesting you brought that up, because I was just ready to say about, you know, how simple it is and the structure of the film. But I think the way that is developed, it keeps the most perfect pacing going, because it has.
It's a fantastically paced movie. Like I said from the very beginning, how it jumps around to all the different characters is so fun.
Exactly. And it's done so perfectly. It kind of keeps that same momentum throughout the film. And it just creates that awesome tone, and it keeps it throughout the whole film. And it's hard to do, I think he did it perfectly.
I just keep picturing like these key locations, like the lighthouse and the town and the church. And I picture these long stretches of roadway in between the areas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He really does paint a fantastic picture of this town.
Oh, big time, big time. Did you notice in the film that, you know, Janet Leigh and Jamie Lee don't have any scenes together?
I did notice it. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, they're not in any scenes. So, once again, I got to give it up to my man, Tom.
Oh, so dude, I love Tom Atkins. Man, that dude, Tom Atkins is just so good. One of the coolest guys on the planet.
One of my favorite scenes in the film is when Tom Atkins goes on to the, you know, the seagrass, and they're kind of investigating what the hell's going on and shit like that. And then, you know, I think it's pretty cool what happens on there and stuff, but just his investigation, the way he's talking, and he's just so damn believable. You know, and he's like, very concerned.
I like when he calls in to Stevie and stuff. Like, hey, man, I could just listen to him talk.
Yeah, totally. Like, you don't know me. You don't know me, but, you know, yeah. I'm the guy that found the seagrass, and I think that's so damn cool, man.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And you know what, man? Honestly, I never thought I'd say this, but he does pretty damn well without his mustache. He can do without it. Like, that mustache is kind of him. So it's like, I was like, whoa, Tommy without a mustache. This is pretty crazy. This is, my mind was almost blown.
Nice. So, Jeremy, you got anything else to add to The Fog?
Not really. I think we're on.
So what would you rate it then, Jeremy?
I think this is definitely probably my highest rating of the night. I gave it an 8 out of 10.
I also gave it an 8 out of 10.
Oh, man.
10 out of 10 from Roots.
Oh, I'm. It's so hard to get it. I don't even know what the hell. Even though I said there's like, I find nothing wrong with this film, I am going to give it a 9.5. It's like one of my, I love this film. And you know, I was thinking about this about a week ago when I did my top 30, and I was like, how the hell did this film not make it on my list?
Did Halloween make your top 30?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did The Thing?
Yeah.
So this would be like your third favorite Carpenter film?
No, the thing is, all those films are almost exact same rating for me. It's weird. Like, I have a hard time with a 10 out of 10. I don't even.
Is Dawn of the Dead a 10?
For me, it is. That's one of the only films that I ever considered to be one, because it's like my all-time favorite, and I think it just has to be like that. But I think it's perfect. I don't know. But I think this movie is just I was so excited. I'm so glad that you really enjoyed it, though, because
Was you nervous? Oh, no, he's not going
to
like it.
No. I mean, I didn't think for a second you weren't going to, but I'm glad that you kind of, you know, saw my points and, you know, pointed out some good things.
And I picked up some of the shit that you was thinking, too.
Yeah, exactly.
The Fog is, yes, you know, it is a great movie.
I will tell you, though, man, this movie is one that you can watch over and over again. I think the more you watch it, the more you might actually even like it. Your rating might even go up.
Definitely, I'll probably pick up more on, you know, just certain scenes where you really – the more you see stuff, the more you can see it, right? The more you see stuff, the more you can see it and see what's, you know, the full scope of things. So, yeah, I mean, totally. It'll probably be one that grows and grows on me. Like Halloween, I didn't love Halloween for the longest time.
Wow. Crazy. But, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that, and it kind of grew on them too. And, you know, it's interesting.
I didn't grow up with it. I just didn't watch it until, like, middle school.
Wow. It was kind of one of those movies for me that was always there. You know, I remember watching Halloween as such a young kid, and that fucking score, dude, being embedded in my mind. Like I said, my music background, man, when I hear music, I just can't, it has a different place in my mind. So, but yeah.
Is that it? Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. All right, everyone. Well, thank you everybody for listening to the 20th episode of 22 Shots of Moods and Horror Podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed this very lengthy 20th episode of the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror Podcast. Thank you everybody again for your suggestions for your top three favorite films. If your movie didn't get picked, don't feel bad. We'll definitely be doing this again in the near future, and we'll pick some more of your guys' films. It's definitely fun to do. Thanks again to everybody for listening. Next week's show is going to be Mr. Adam. That's the name, right?
Mr. Jones, dude. Mr. Jones. You really need to start writing down the episodes, man.
Yeah.
I swear, like, 9 times out of 10, you get the name wrong of the movie we're talking about.
Yep.
Mr. Jones.
Mr. Jones. So that will be next week's show. And then the week after that, we'll talk about next week. Ends. So... thanks everybody again for listening. If you want to follow me on my channel, you can do so at youtube.com/NASRuler22. If you want to follow JP, aka the man who hates Pee Wee Herman but likes him in the Tripper, you can follow him at youtube.com/DoubleShotJ. Of course, Moods, click the subscribe button down below. You can also follow us on Twitter at 22ShotsPodcast. We are on there all the time. Thanks to everybody who's been following us over on Twitter. That's very awesome of you. We definitely have quite a few followers over there. And if you want to email us any questions or anything like that, you could do so at the 22 Shots of Moods and Horror, moodsandhorror@gmail.com. That's 22 Shots of Moods, A-N-D, horror@gmail.com. If you want to listen to us on thedevilseyes.com, please do so at www.thedevilseyes.com. And I shall be posting a new Blu-ray review up there probably tomorrow of ATM. So if you guys want to read some of my writing, you can do so over there. That should be it. I hope everyone has a safe week and everyone have a safe Memorial Day, Friday and Saturday and Sunday. And we'll talk to you guys next Monday. Everybody stay good. Talk to you guys soon.
Peace.
Peace.